Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long distance calls you can make anytime. And no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included.
To AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Prime Minister Tony Blair is preparing to announce a major reduction in British troops in Iraq. According to reports in the British press, the announcement could come as soon as tomorrow. There are reports suggesting Britain's contingent of 7,000 in Iraq could be cut to 4,000 by early summer. Already, reaction from the White House, where we go live to CBS's Mark Knoller. Mark?
Jim, word of the partial British pullout comes as no surprise to the White House. An official here says President Bush conferred about it this morning in a secure video hookup with British Prime Minister Blair. In the White House view, it's a sign of success. The official says the situation in the areas of southern Iraq in which British troops are deployed has improved so well that security can be turned over to Iraqi forces. The U.S. hopes to be able to do the same thing eventually. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Knoller, CBS News.
The military says an American soldier was killed fighting insurgents today. In Baritz, CBS's Cammie McCormick on what the military is up against.
First Lieutenant Ryan Bakey's company has lost five men trying to protect the Baritz police station. They occupy the building now, but evidence of the fighting is all around.
We made contact with quite a few people in that building. That's the building, six Hellfire missiles later.
Today, these soldiers are patrolling the area with Iraqi army forces. They're searching homes for weapons in the hopes of cutting down on the increasing number of deadly attacks against both coalition and Iraqi forces. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Baritz, Indiala Province.
Big ruling for big tobacco today, actually in favor of all big corporate interests. The justices tossing out a $79-plus million punitive damage award to the widow of a longtime smoker. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
Corporate defendants in other cases now will be able to point to this ruling when they try to cut or limit punitive damage awards. So this is no small matter. What it really does is give trial judges and lower appeals courts more guidance than before in determining when a damage award is simply too high.
JetBlue wants to make up, wrapping its apologies in a sort of traveler's bill of rights. CBS's Dan Revive explains.
That name borrowed from consumer groups that have been demanding a bill of rights for passengers. The JetBlue version is mainly discount vouchers for future flights. $25 if you're half an hour late. At 3 hours, $100.
At 5 hours, we get you off the airplane.
David Neilman, JetBlue's chief executive, vowing no more being stranded on a plane for 11 hours on the runway. One man at Pittsburgh's airport has sympathy.
That was unfortunate. The weather had to be so bad, but I think they're going to get things back in order.
JetBlue speaks of a painful lesson. The vouchers and other changes will cost around $30 million. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
It's Tuesday. You know where Brittany is?
She just checked into a rehab facility in California. The good news is she's finally listening to her mother, who was urging her to do this for a long time.
People Magazine's Larry Sutton talking about Britney Spears in rehab at an undisclosed location. This is CBS News.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
My name is Leslie, and I've been smoke-free for 6.5 months.
Quitting smoking is hard, but millions of people have succeeded.
My name is Brad, and I've been smoke-free for 15 months now.
If you decide to quit smoking, visit Quit Assist, a free resource that links you to a wealth of expert quitting information, including websites, guides, quit lines, and more. It could help you find your own way to success.
My name is Etta, and I have been smoke-free for 4 years.
Quit Assist, a free information resource. Log on at philipmorrisusa.com.
Another record close for the Dow today, up 19 points, finishing at 12,786. While a lot of the country still has snow, wildfires, and the fatalities they bring, a big concern in the Pacific Northwest.
The numbers are steadily increasing. Wildfires killed 24 firefighters last year, double the number in 2005, and six more than the average of the past 10 years. Expert on wildfire fatalities, Dick Mangan, blames increased job pressure to save homes.
There's going to be more of a tendency to look very hard at the firefighters. firefighter safety and say, I'm going to let this home burn down and get it rebuilt rather than put my people at risk.
Critics blame increasing statistics on a policy that sends more troops into the most dangerous fires. Stephen Kaufman, CBS News, Spokane.
A couple of brothers who shared a home in Michigan killed in a head-on traffic collision with each other. Jesse and James West killed near Paw Paw Township. Police say they've never seen anything quite like it. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Are you struggling with too much?
There isn't one good reason to choose life insurance from Foresters. There's 17 million. Foresters Life Insurance Organization is proud to support Children's Miracle Network hospitals right across North America and the 17 million children they treat each year. Foresters partners with Children's Miracle Network, local children's hospitals, and radio stations to create inspiring fundraising events called Radiothons, raising millions for local hospitals, including UC Davis Children's Hospital. We know how important the work that the UC Davis Children's Hospital is to the Sacramento area. That is why Foresters is passionate about supporting the hospital and the Children's Miracle Network. Because helping communities and children is what we're all about. As founding sponsor of Radiothon, we pay for all the administrative costs of the program. That means every dollar raised here stays here. When you choose a life insurance product from Foresters, you're providing security for your family and hope for millions of children. Foresters, proud sponsor of the Children's Miracle Network Radiothon. Visit foresters.biz. Foresters, life insurance is what we do. Helping children and communities is who we are.
Studios in New York City. This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Ah, New Orleans. The Big Easy. Sweet Lady Gumbo.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Tuesday, Fat Tuesday to be specific, the 20th of February, 2007, 6 minutes past the hour. Coming up on the show, this is our special Mardi Gras show. We're taking a closer look at New Orleans, the city where carnival is king, and the city that is still struggling to recover a year and a half after Hurricane Katrina. This hour, we'll talk with Tracy Washington, director of the NAACP's Gulf Coast Advocacy Center, about grassroots efforts to improve conditions in New Orleans. We'll also talk with journalist and longtime New Orleans resident Katie Rechtall about having a baby right in the middle of an enormous hurricane and about how post-Katrina redevelopment is fundamentally changing the look of New Orleans. Plus, we'll have an update on the Walter Reed scandal and an update on Australia's important new attitude about light bulbs. It's all coming up. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on The Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. In Taji, which is about 12 miles north of Baghdad today, a tanker truck, a big semi carrying chlorine, blew up, either due to a bomb on board the truck or to a roadside bomb. At least five people were killed by the explosion. More than 100 people sought medical treatment after breathing in the toxic chlorine gas after that truck blew up. Also today, a suicide bomber attacked a funeral tent on Palestine Street in eastern Baghdad, killing five people. A car bomb at a gas station in southwestern Baghdad killed six people. Here's Brian Murphy reporting on that for the Associated Press from Baghdad.
People tend to queue up at the gas stations quite early because fuel is in short supply. So there was a line of people waiting to fill up their cars or to buy gas, and a car rigged with explosives hit this line of cars at the gas station.
That's Brian Murphy in Baghdad. Also today, a car bomb killed five more people near the market in the southern Baghdad neighborhood called Rashid. The British press, the BBC in particular, is reporting just within the last hour or so that Tony Blair is expected to make a statement to the House of Commons tomorrow telling them that 1,500 of Britain's 7,000 soldiers in Iraq will be home within a couple of weeks, and that 3,000 of Britain's 7,000 troops will be home to Britain by the end of the year. U.S. authorities in Iraq just released their yearbook, their year-in-review report for how things went in Iraq in 06. It's 25 pages long. It's signed by the U.S. Ambassador and General George Casey, the outgoing head of U.S. forces in Iraq. The cover of this yearbook says, unity, security, prosperity. You know, all the things you think of when you look back at Iraq in 06. On the final page of the report, there are glossy full-color photos of the new Iraqi government. There's the Iraqi prime minister, Nouri al-Maliki. There's the president of Iraq, Jalal Talabani. There's the Shiite vice president, Adil Abid al-Mahdi. And there's the Sunni vice president, Adil Abid al-Mahdi. Wait a minute. The Shiite guy is Adil Abid al-Mahdi, and the Sunni guy is Adil Abed Almaty too? Yeah, they listed the same name for both vice presidents. I'm sure they don't mind. It's not like these guys are mortal sectarian rivals or anything, or that Sunnis might be insulted if you called them Shiite names and implied that, frankly, you can't tell these guys apart anyway, even when they're the vice president of the country. No harm, no foul, I'm sure. Today's newsflash, judges are important. Here's Louise Schiavone for ABC News.
A federal appeals court has ruled that suspected terrorists held at Guantanamo Bay may not challenge their imprisonment in U.S. courts. The 2-1 decision is based on the newly passed Military Commissions Act.
Our courts go like this. Supreme Court, and below that there's the circuit courts, below that the district courts. Everybody knows that on the Supreme Court we've got 9 judges, right? One level below that, on the circuit courts, there's any number of judges. The circuits are regional, and they all have different numbers of judges. When you bring a case that gets to the courts one level below the Supremes, you don't generally get to have every judge on that circuit hear your case. You get a panel. You get a 3-judge panel. Today, a 3-judge panel ruled on whether or not the president is actually a king.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not the way I'm supposed to say that. Perhaps it's more politic for me to say.
They ruled on whether or not the president has to follow the law, whether the Constitution or the will of George W. Bush is higher law in this country. Because the Constitution says if the U.S. government puts you in prison, you get a day in court to challenge that. You get due process. That is not to the liking of Master and Commander George, so there was a court case today about whether or not prisoners at Guantanamo get a day in court, or whether George can literally throw them in jail and throw away the key forever with no legal redress. In prison, forever, no charges, no right to challenge your imprisonment. The panel that heard the case was one judge appointed by Bill Clinton, Judith Rogers. She said George is not a king. Prisoners get a day in court. It's the law no matter what George wants. But the other two judges were appointed by Republicans, by Reagan and by Poppy Bush. The Reagan judge is the same judge who voted to overturn the convictions of Oliver North and John Poindexter in the Iran-Contra scandal. He's also one of the judges responsible for appointing Kenneth Starr to investigate Bill Clinton. And now he's the guy who made the majority to give the American president unlimited monarchical powers of banishment and imprisonment without trial. So that's the newsflash for today. Judges, it turns out, matter. They'll appeal this one upstairs to the Supreme Court, and meanwhile, Senate Democrats say they will pass a law to bring back habeas corpus rights in what used to be our nice little constitutional democracy. Remember that? Those are some of the stories I'm following today. But for other news, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. JetBlue, who overnight went from being America's hippest, cheapest airline to the who stranded a plane full of people for 10.5 hours during an ice storm, now says it will spend up to $30 million on new procedures for flight disruptions. Launch PR spin control mode, stat! It has also introduced a customer bill of rights, which essentially says, we promise not to hold you hostage on our planes anymore, and here's some vouchers for next time. We're really sorry. The provisions for this bill of rights have been made retroactive to February 14th. Passengers from last week's JetBlue flights are due to deplane sometime tomorrow. And boy, they're getting some serious vouchers. Argentine lawyer Adolfo Caballero and his wife have been getting a flood of wedding invitations from the children of his dozens of cousins, friends from his club, and clients of his law firm. Too many wedding invitations, actually. And so the Caballeros took out a paid announcement on the social pages of a newspaper saying, stop inviting us already. Stop. Read the ad in La Nación, quote, we thank you ahead of time for understanding this petition, which is due to our saturated social calendar. Complained the 66-year-old Caballero, it's fun for youngsters who want to dance until 5 a.m., but the next day I'm tired and I can't move when I want to go play tennis. Spoken like a man who's done one chicken dance too many. Later on Kent Jones Now, the asteroids are coming. Are we ready? And what should we wear, Rachel?
Thank you, Kent. I like the wedding story, but it does. The newspaper, you know, they could have sent out a bulk email or something.
Something like that. He is old school, apparently, and I said, well, I'll read La Nación and realize, don't invite us to your weddings. We've been to 50 of them, and my knees hurt or something like that.
Can't play tennis anymore as comfortably as I used to. Australia really is banning light bulbs. This is very. They have mandatory efficiency standards for all sorts of appliances. They're going to apply the same system to light bulbs, and then gradually tighten up their efficiency standards over the next couple of years until either light bulbs get way better, or normal incandescent light bulbs will be banned in Australia within like 2 years.
Yeah, the fluorescent ones apparently are much more energy efficient.
Indeed.
I was reading this earlier.
Everyone
hates them because they remind you of being at the DMV.
They need to make them more flattering.
Sexy. They need to sex up the fluorescent lights somehow.
We need a celebrity campaign.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll see. All right. Well, it's 14 minutes past the hour. This is our special Mardi Gras show. We'll be right back. It's the Rachel Maddow Show.
It's Mardi Gras on the Rachel Maddow Show.
Along with AM 1320, give to the UC Davis Children's Hospital and help a needy child. Call 888-780-8811.
Real words from real people about lifeline screening.
I was told I should see my doctor or go to the emergency room immediately. Later I said to the physician, I guess I'm pretty lucky to have had those tests. He answered, it saved your life.
In less than 1 hour, Lifeline screening checks for warning signs of stroke and vascular disease. Nearly 50% of people that suffer a stroke never have symptoms. Don't wait until it's too late. Get screened today.
The doctor said I'm one lucky guy, and if I hadn't gone to the screening, I would have been a statistic.
$129, 4 ultrasound tests, no needles, no pain, just peace of mind.
I owe my life to you.
Mobile testing units are coming to your neighborhood. If you're over 50, make an appointment by calling 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
Lifeline screening saved my life.
Please call now. 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
Warp.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Tuesday on the Rachel Maddow Show.
That was terrifying. Jesus. Welcome back to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Who let that guy in? As you can tell, possibly, we're celebrating Mardi Gras today. Happy Fat Tuesday. Our thoughts, of course, turn to New Orleans at Mardi Gras, still staggering well over a year and a half after the hurricane and the floods and the neglect and the recriminations. We're going to take a look at the city's nationally touted rising crime rates and its overtaxed criminal justice system with my friend, the writer and death row lawyer, Billy Southern. He's a staff attorney with the Capitol Appeals Project. We'll also examine activists' efforts to improve conditions in the city, welcoming back Tracy Washington, director of the NAACP's Gulf Coast Advocacy Center. Plus, we'll get an inside look at some of Mardi Gras' oldest and strangest and most tremendously elitist white traditions with a woman who renounced her Mardi Gras crown. But to start out, I caught up with Katie Rechtall. Katie Rechtall is a freelance journalist. She's based in New Orleans. She's also an Open Society Journalism Fellow tasked with documenting life in New Orleans post-Hurricane Katrina. She's one of the few journalists who are participating in that fellowship who was a New Orleans local before Hurricane Katrina hit.
We all got year-long grants, and mine allowed me to actually move back to New Orleans and work again as a journalist here. So it was, for me, it was a real lifesaver.
You wouldn't have been able to come back to the city otherwise?
No, my job, I'd worked with the Alt Weekly here, which is called Gambit, and they had dissolved their news staff after the storm because of for financial reasons.
I know also I could hear, is that Hector in the background?
That is Hector in the background.
And he was born literally the day before the storm.
He was, 24 hours before Katrina came through.
You have to wonder. I mean, I don't know too much about the physiology of that, but do you know if he was due on that day anyway, or do you think he came early ahead of the storm?
It's interesting. He was due. He was 2 weeks early. The older people say, oh, of course he came early because it's low pressure and that brings on babies.
Wow.
But then doctors I know roll their eyes at that, so I don't know what's for real.
That's doctors' job, is to roll their eyes at old wives' tales that are always true.
That's
how I feel about it. But it is kind of an alarming image to imagine, like, because you see like a low pressure zone the way they do it on the Weather Channel, like
right.
Coming along and taking your baby. Like it's a very impressive image, I guess.
It is. I have to say, we were in National Enquirer as a result of they had three Katrina babies in National Enquirer, and Hector and I were honored to be one of the mother baby couples in the National Enquirer with Whitney on the cover, Whitney Houston on the cover. But the woman next to me had gone into labor when she swam through rat-infested water and stuff, and luckily I was in the hospital, and you know, when the storm hit, so it wasn't that exciting.
I do want to talk to you about your journalism and the recovery stuff, but I'm very curious about that. I mean, the fact that you were giving birth at this time, and I mean, which hospital were you in, and what were the circumstances okay in the hospital? Were you able to stay there and recover after the birth?
We were in Touro Hospital, Touro Infirmary, which is a hospital uptown, and it did not flood, but the conditions were not great. The electricity went out shortly after the storm. The generators started failing, and the water stopped flowing. So things were not good. The food was running out, and we evacuated on Wednesday because they heard there was an armed mob headed toward the hospital, and the city told the hospital they couldn't protect them.
So you left town at that, evacuated the hospital, but also got out of New Orleans.
Right. We didn't have a car before the storm, and so we got a ride with a nurse to Baton Rouge, the delivery nurse, who put us in her car and took us there and dropped us off at the airport in Baton Rouge.
You mean the delivery nurse angel that you apparently had? Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. Well, Katie, what have you been covering as a journalist since, in terms of the recovery, what are you focusing on?
I had always covered poverty here, which is not hard to cover since it's such a high poverty city, but that's what I'm covering again. I'm covering especially one working poor neighborhood called Treme. People from out of town, especially from Europe, know it as in the neighborhood where a lot of the city's jazz musicians came from. But it is a neighborhood that was not damaged much by the storm as physically, but it has had a lot of the problems that other neighborhoods have had.
Minutely detailed working-class neighborhood with no working-class people in it.
Exactly.
Yeah. When you say that so many of the houses in the neighborhood, are these the same developers who were active in New Orleans ahead of time? Is this out-of-town people who came in and saw a real estate opportunity? Who are the people behind these economic forces?
A lot of the people that I see in this particular neighborhood are people who had been property owners before the storm and had been gradually gentrifying the neighborhood beforehand, but now are doing it in massive scale.
I mean, gentrification is an issue that comes up in all sorts of American cities, and you kind of, in the mind of a developer and in the mind of somebody who's kind of one of the pro-gentrifying forces, you think, God, they've always fantasized about this. If only we could have all the people here now move out all at once, then we could get this neighborhood taken care of once and for all. And it seems like Katrina kind of gave this huge jump start to the gentrification process that exists in other cities and that must have already been at work at least a little bit in New Orleans.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. It's a redeveloper's dream.
Is there any sort of... I know there's been some political activism around trying to hold on to public housing stock that wasn't damaged terrifically in the storm. Has there been any sort of movement or any sort of organizing around trying to hold on to affordable housing in the neighborhoods where poor people used to live?
I haven't seen it yet. I think even the public housing activism has just really picked up in the last few months. So many of the people who are affected are still out of town. In Dallas or Houston or San Antonio and don't have a voice in what's going on and are struggling to try to just survive, you know, don't have time to come back here and lead a protest.
I wonder then if actually Mardi Gras is part of it then, because in Mardi Gras, I imagine folks who have not been able to move back may be able to try to come just for that occasion and stay with friends who are there. There may be some, you know, there's obviously an influx of tourists, but I wonder if there's an influx of former locals, people trying to come back just for this occasion.
And definitely, I'm expecting to walk around with Hector and see lots of people who have never seen the baby, who I haven't seen since the storm. I think they'll be home visiting and barbecuing with their families.
Katie Rechtall, I'm grateful for your insight into this stuff. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me, Rachel.
Katie Rechtall is a freelance journalist, and she's one of the Open Society Journalism Fellows living in New Orleans to document post-Katrina New Orleans. This is The Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Now, you have a very unique accounting system for your boutique.
Yep. I designed my own spreadsheet.
Wow, looks complicated.
That's why I have a cheat sheet for my spreadsheet.
That is one big cheat sheet.
That's just the index.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business.
Really?
Yeah, QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't. It even makes tax time a cinch.
I'm switching.
Great.
Can you help me fold this back up?
I doubt it. QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
If you're a college graduate and you owe at least $15,000 in student loans, here's a toll-free number you should know.
1-866-600-3019.
Or if you borrowed money to put a child through college and are now coping with big monthly payments, call toll-free.
1-866-600-3019.
Talk to a specially trained counselor about a federally backed consolidation loan that could cut your monthly college debt payments by up to 50%. It's easy to qualify right over the phone.
1-866-600-3019.
Find out how to lock in a fixed interest rate that will never go up, regardless of the economy, and get terms that could drive your rate even lower.
1-866-600-3019.
Call toll-free today to learn how a federally backed consolidation loan can work for you.
1-866-600-3019.
Hello?
How in the world did you do this?
Do what, Mom?
Put a picture of my precious grandson on a postage stamp.
It's not an ordinary stamp, Mom. It's a photo stamp. Now anyone can take photos of their kids, pets, or almost anything and turn them into real U.S. postage at photostamps.com. You just go to the website, customize your own photo stamps, and they'll arrive in the mail in a few days.
Imagine all the possibilities. Birth announcements, wedding invitations, holiday cards.
To make all your mail unforgettable, go to photostamps.com today. Photostamps. Real postage, really you.
Does the thought of going...
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking. As in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpot start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Sunny day with tonight's
AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. Now, Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks into Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area. So stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the west, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
It's the Rachel Maddow Show, and it's only Mardi Gras once a year, so pay attention.
Welcome back. I like that one better. Thanks, Chris. It's 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Happy Mardi Gras. Happy Fat Tuesday. Our special coverage continues in just a moment. First, though, I do want to update you on a few important headlines that we are keeping our eyes on today. In a speech today before a crowd of thousands of Iranians in northern Iran, Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad offered to close down Iran's nuclear program if the United States would do the same. Needless to say, White House spokesman and flautist Tony Snow questioned the seriousness of the offer.
We're perfectly happy to help Iran acquire civilian nuclear power. We are not, however, and the international community has made it clear that Iran should not be in a position to develop or possess nuclear weapons.
Yes, Tony. But what about the "I'll stop mine if you stop yours" argument? What about that? Maybe we could persuade them to consider this idea. The United Nations Security Council has set tomorrow as a deadline for Iran to stop uranium enrichment or face further economic sanctions. Meanwhile, beyond the Thumper Dome, the BBC in Britain says it has acquired U.S. contingency plans for an attack on Iran. Here's Susan Morris reporting.
Should the order ever be given for a U.S. attack on Iran, it's been revealed that it would come in the form of airstrikes, not just on its known nuclear sites, but on the country's entire military infrastructure, its missile programs, and its air defense and strategic bases.
Susan Morris reporting for the BBC. Now, the U.S. is insisting that we are not planning to attack Iran. In fact, we're trying to use persuasion to stop Iran's nuke program. But the BBC says that these plans that they have received include possible triggers for a U.S. attack on Iran. Those triggers include potential confirmation that Iran was developing a nuclear weapon, or, and this is the super scary part, or confirmation that a high casualty attack on U.S. forces in Iraq could be traced back to Iran. That's very scary. Finally, the trial of Scooter Libby is almost ready to go to the jury. Both sides gave closing arguments today. Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, faces perjury and obstruction charges. If convicted, he could be looking at 30 years in the Crowbar Hotel. Those are some of the stories that we're keeping an eye on today. One woman who has been in the thick of things in New Orleans since Hurricane Katrina is our next guest. She's a New Orleans native, from providing legal counsel to homeless New Orleanians being evicted from hotels last year, so hotels could instead cater to Mardi Gras crowds, remember that, to ensuring that the children of New Orleans get to have an education. Tracy Washington has been in the heart of these battles. She's the director of the NAACP's Gulf Coast Advocacy Center, and she joins us on the phone live from New Orleans. Tracy, nice to have you back on the show. Happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras to everyone. I wish everyone got the day off.
Yeah, man, me too. How is it this year at Mardi Gras compared to last year, say?
A lot more crowded, and I'm pretty sure we still do this. We measure the success of Mardi Gras by the tonnage, by how much trash is collected. So I'm sure tomorrow, based upon what I saw today driving the streets of New Orleans, we will show a success compared to last year. Down still from years past, yeah. But we're still getting there.
See, that's flawed methodology because you could have a small number of really trashy people who could skew the figures. But you never know. That's why I couldn't go.
Based upon the drunk people that I tried to avoid last evening, you could be correct.
I mean, there is a sense that there is a sense of, and I know from folks who are New Orleans natives, and particularly people who have lived there since Hurricane Katrina, that there's a beauty of Mardi Gras, and there's a lot of pride in it, and it is also the biggest hassle in the entire world.
Correct. I don't know if I could add anything to that. You basically summed it up. except if you are like me, I suppose, and you have children, and they force you to repeat this like Groundhog's Day every single year. So we're back again.
Tracy, in terms of the lots of tourists are obviously coming into the city this year for the celebrations, do you feel like folks who are coming into the city for this special occasion are going to see evidence of activism, of the local residents working together and participating in the various organizing campaigns to try to get their city back?
You know, I was really very surprised and pleasantly surprised by the number of people who got in contact with me and from whom I've heard about who said, while I'm down, I'd like to do XYZ. Hmm. I'd like to gut a house. I'd like to, you know, get involved with making telephone calls or doing things of that nature. And I say pleasantly surprised because, you know, that's generally not something you would hear someone wanting to do while they were at the Mardi Gras or, on, you know, on a Saturday morning after a Friday night of revelry. So I won't say that it was a tremendous number, but I was really very pleased by the number of people who requested to do that. And the I'm so sorry. It's not as though the
I can talk to him if you want.
The newspaper has not shied away from putting out the headlines and the stories about the things that are still happening down here. The housing crisis, which is, you know, it's just horrific.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that the Times-Picayune has continued to run stories about our, you know, jacked up housing system, our jacked up, you know, Army Corps of Engineers and the like. So I've been pleased with that.
I know that more than 50,000 units of rental housing were destroyed. USA Today reported 8 weeks ago that, literally as of 8 weeks ago, 94 New Orleans homeowners had received federal aid to rebuild. A total of 94. No tenants, only people who own buildings.
Rachel, that's the sad part about it.
Yeah.
There was no designation of money. There, of the $10 billion that was provided for us to rebuild, none of that money was given to renters. And in this city, 57% of those individuals who lost housing were renters. We had a backward sort of curve here. We had far less people who owned homes in the city of New Orleans than were renters, and so all of the money has gone to homeowners. It's just nuts. Not only did we do that, but a tremendous number of households, 5,200 in fact, were public housing residents. And, you know, the wisdom of the federal government said, wow, look, there was a hurricane. Let's close all of the public housing developments, even though there was no damage, because we would like to put that money and give that money to developers who can, you know, bulldoze these buildings and make far less affordable housing for people. It's really very backwards.
Do you think that housing, the lack of housing, and the kind of, I guess, mass-scale gentrification and pricing out that's happening right now, is that the number one issue right now that people ought to understand about New Orleans? Is that the number one issue facing the city in your mind?
It really is. I mean, there are so many other issues that we fight. You mentioned in your introduction education, still crazy, criminal justice, which, you know, I tell people when they were telling me they were coming, sort of jokingly, when they were coming to New Orleans for Mardi Gras this year, I said, now don't make the mistake of urinating in the quarter because we might not get you out of jail till next year. But, you know, I mean, our criminal justice system is still just in a horrible shape. But housing is just the biggest crisis that we're dealing with because we cannot get our people home, even if they want to rent. They're so few places that are accessible to them. If you are a low-income worker, if you make minimum wage or just above cleaning the toilets in hotels or making the beds in hotels, a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment right now may run you $900 a month.
Hmm.
And that's a bargain when people tell me, I got a two-bedroom, one-bath for $950. And, you know, you cannot afford to live in the city of New Orleans with that little money coming in. You know, $9 an hour is $18,000 a year. And, you know, folks are just jumping to get $9 an hour. It's, we have to consider, Rachel, housing as a civil right. Mm-hmm. Affordable housing must be something that we say as Americans, we will provide for our neighbors, friends, families, because we know that without shelter, you have nothing.
Mm. You know, Tracy, one of the things that has gotten a little bit of attention in the national media has been the protests in New Orleans about specifically about the public housing units, about these undamaged public housing units coming down in a city that's so desperately in need of livable housing. I wonder about the even bigger issue that you're talking about housing as a civil right, about the rents being out of control, about renters being completely unhelped in terms of being able to get back into housing in New Orleans. What kind of advocacy is already happening around that, and what should people listening around the country right now know is happening to try to fix that people might be able to support?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, there is, I call it the quiet storm that erupts about once a month or once every 6 weeks. And it's, you know, back right after Hurricane Katrina hit, we had the misfortune of having one of our congressional members here in the state say, wow, Hurricane Katrina did something that we haven't been able to do for years, get rid of low-income and poor people. Well, guess what? They are coming back. And it's a quiet sort of revolt. They said, we're going to live on the sofa of relatives. We're going to live in our cars. We're going to get back. Now, I don't want that to be the case, but that's what they're doing. And when we reach that critical mass, people stand up and they have been shouting and they've been demanding that affordable housing be provided. So in the case of public housing residents, we've had beautiful actions by public housing residents and friends all over the country who have come in and said, we're going to help you clean out these units.
Mm.
2 weeks ago, I marveled at high school kids here in their own act of civil disobedience who came in. They were from out of state, and they were cleaning public housing units, mops, brooms, 409, and they weren't allowed to be in there. But it was just so ridiculous that these places were not open. And for so many of our elderly and low-income neighbors and friends and relatives, it was such a blessing to have them there. And, Rachel, when you go into them, you know, and one of the chaperones commented, she said, you know, in New York, this place would go for $2,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, that's exactly right. And it's just unfortunate that a place this clean and this well-maintained, brick buildings with concrete walls,
yeah,
you can't huff and puff and blow them down, are just not being used right now.
Yeah.
And so that kind of advocacy is out there. We've had tremendous efforts by Advancement Project, the civil rights organization out of Washington, D.C., whom I've had the privilege of litigating with, who've been here in each and every action and said, we will file the lawsuits. We will help you organize on the ground because we know this is wrong. This is not a just democracy. So this kind of action has buoyed our residents and people like me who say we need the help. We need the legal resources. We need the monetary resources to get these people home. They want to come home.
Tracy Washington, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it today. Happy Mardi Gras to you.
Thank you.
Tracy Washington is the director of the NAACP's Gulf Coast Advocacy Center. We'll post a link to the website of her organization at mattoonline.com today. We'll also post a link to the Advancement Project, which you just mentioned there at the end of the interview, about some of the legal work that's happening around social justice and the fight for public housing in New Orleans. The Advancement Project, based in Washington, D.C., a pretty impressive organization. We'll also post a link to KatrinaInfoNet.net at our website, which is a website that can hook you up with some other progressive causes going on right now in the Big Easy, not just for Mardi Gras, but for all year long. It's 47 minutes past the hour. This is our special Mardi Gras coverage. Kent Jones joins me next.
It's the Rachel Maddow Show, where Fat Tuesday is fatter than ever.
Be a part of the miracles that happen every day at the UC Davis Children's Hospital. Donate through AM 1320 KCTC Sacramento by calling 888-780-8811.
Real words from real people about Lifeline screening.
I was told I should see my doctor or go to the emergency room immediately. Later, I said to the physician, I guess I'm pretty lucky to have had those tests. He answered, it saved your life.
In less than 1 hour, Lifeline screening checks for warning signs of stroke and vascular disease. Nearly 50% of people that suffer a stroke never have symptoms. Don't wait until it's too late. Get screened today.
The doctor said I'm one lucky guy, and if I hadn't gone to the screening, I would have been a statistic.
$129, 4 ultrasound tests, no needles, no pain. Just peace of mind.
I owe my life to you.
Mobile testing units are coming to your neighborhood. If you're over 50, make an appointment by calling 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
Lifeline screening saved my life.
Please call now. 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
What could be the biggest financial...
Silver State Helicopter 60-second radio for Sacramento.
Ready for a career change? Have you dreamed of a career as a helicopter pilot? Silver State Helicopters, the United States' number one helicopter flight school, is now enrolling students for its March flight class in Sacramento. We'll show you how you can earn your commercial helicopter pilot's license in less than 18 months and start earning $50,000 to $100,000 annually. Are you worried about the cost? Don't be. It's cheaper than college. This professional training program teaches you to become a commercial helicopter pilot, and there's no upfront cost to you. In fact, the entire cost of your training is deferred until after you begin your career. Why? Because of the massive shortage of helicopter pilots. Classes start in March. Enrollment is limited, so call now. 1-888-91-PILOT. That's 1-888-91-PILOT. Ready to become a helicopter pilot? The sky's the limit at Silver State Helicopters. We're waiting for your call. 1-888-91-PILOT. That's 1-888-91-PILOT. Remember, classes start in March. Call right now. 1-888-91-PILOT.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes.
It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights.
Because he got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially.
The world has turned against this.
If your own personal Internet.
That is
you
now,
and me.
You and me is that right?
Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Subliminal mind.
back to Fat Tuesday on the Rachel Maddow. Hey, watch it with those beads.
That's funny. Well done. This is exciting. I never didn't listen to these before the show, so every time. It's like a little surprise. It's like opening up a little candy heart. 52 and a half minutes past the hour.
From the Rachel Maddow Show, now it's Kent Jones Now. With Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline Parking. Cruising around looking for a parking space, while annoying, is at least democratic. You find it, you got it. Well, now a company called Spot Scout would like to change all that by creating an eBay-type online marketplace where very important drivers could reserve private parking spaces in garages and driveways using their cell phones and also swap public parking spots in real time with vacant spaces going to the highest bidder. And what if you don't have a cell phone with web access? Then you can just keep driving your gremlin around the block, loser. Spot Scout also dreams of drivers posting information about their planned departure times and offering the space to the highest bidder. Boston Transportation Commissioner Thomas Tinlin says he worries about setting up a, quote, system of the haves and the have-nots.
Ding!
It seems like a short leap from that to, let me whip out my Palm Pilot here and reserve a good seat on the subway. The highest bid is only $12. Rachel?
Thank you, Kent. Happy Mardi Gras to you.
And happy Mardi Gras to you.
Wearing your Zephyrs jersey today.
I am. I am letting the good times roll.
They are laissez-ing over there. I see.
Roulaying.
Today we've got Billy Southern joining us next hour.
Terrific.
And we've got Rebecca Snedeker, who's the woman who renounced her Mardi Gras crown. We've got lots more New Orleans coming.
Imagine.
But today's Rachel Maddow Show front page story
Eureka!
Is a follow-up on the latest national revelations about our fundamentally incompetent American government. Government so incompetent, it makes me want to start yelling really Joe McCarthy-sounding things about this being un-American and a national disgrace.
I'll do it. It's un-American! This is a national disgrace!
Thank you, Kent.
You're welcome.
The prime incompetent U.S. government example of our day, of course, is the response to Katrina, the thousands of Americans pleading for drinking water and rescue from their roofs for days with no help in sight. Mm. The war in Iraq, of course, its own kind of governmental disaster. And I think Katrina and Iraq will be the bookends for this Bush-Cheney government in history. There may be three bookends, Katrina, Iraq, and the whole torture and secret prisons thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of a strange bookshelf if it needs three bookends, but you know what I mean. But this Walter Reed thing, this Walter Reed, oh my God, what are we doing to our wounded soldiers thing, this has got to have a place on that bookshelf too.
Is the system working? Yes. Is it working perfectly? No.
Oh, not perfect. Hmm. Tony Snow today. Today we started to see the real leadership of the U.S. government on this issue. We learned in a two-part series in the Washington Post that hundreds of outpatient soldiers are living in rodent and roach-infested, filthy facilities at Walter Reed. Nobody looking after them. Nobody ensuring they're getting follow-up care. Guys coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan with missing limbs and brain damage being put into SRO hotel rooms and told to fend for themselves. Literally, they're being issued mouse traps. It's a national disgrace. It's shocking. And the response from our fearless leadership in Washington, from the White House today?
What's wrong needs to be fixed. Now, the people who are going to do the fixing are over there. So you might want to talk to them.
Over where? Who are you talking
to? Those
about?
Are the people to talk to. The DOD.
I know. This is a commitment the president has made, you said, to the families, right?
Yeah.
So why isn't the president, why isn't his staff saying, let's get to the bottom of it now?
We are trying to get to the bottom of it, and the people who are responsible for getting to the bottom of it work on the other side of the river.
Oh. The other side of the river. So don't ask me. I only speak for the president. Go ask somebody else in the government. Go ask the Pentagon or the Democrats or something. Yeah, just incredible.
It's all the way on the other side of the river.
Yeah.
Why, that's on the moon.
Yeah. He said, oh, we've known about these conditions for long before the Washington Post piece came out. We just think you ought to talk to somebody else about fixing them. Wow. Unbelievable. The Rachel Maddow Show.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
No one is going to mistake Chris Dodd for a front runner in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. But Dodd has hit on a campaign theme that is worthy of attention. He has, in recent days, made the defense of the Constitution and the restoration of the rule of law central to his outreach to Democratic primary and caucus voters. One of the saddest days I've spent in public life in the United States Senate occurred last fall when the Senate of the United States passed the Military Commissions Act, Dodd says of the Bush administration-sponsored law that eliminates habeas corpus protections and retreats from traditional commitments on the part of the U.S. to respect the Geneva Conventions. Dodd says, I want to see us get back to being a nation that supports the rule of law. He's backing those words up with a new bill that would restore habeas corpus, bar information acquired through torture from being introduced in trials, and limit presidential authority to interpret the meaning and application of the Geneva Conventions. For more on Chris Dodd's campaign for the Constitution, visit thenation.com. This is John Nichols, reminding you to listen weekend nights to Radio Nation with Laura Flanders on Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Rachel Maddow. You've probably heard that gold has almost tripled in the last few years, reaching over $721 an ounce in 2006. And many experts are forecasting that gold's uptrend has just begun. Do we know why? Well, rising deficits and geopolitical concerns are driving factors behind the rising gold price, and those things aren't exactly U-turning right now. You could begin acquiring gold through the experts at ITM Trading. Seriously consider calling ITM at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's not about the left or the right. It's about the facts. Since it bottomed, gold has risen more than 183% to its most recent high. If you want to learn more about this, call ITM Trading now and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions. They can send you a free information packet about owning gold that can get you started. It's actually really simple. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
While driving, think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over 250,000 people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
The president's biggest ally set to start pulling troops out of the war zone.
No U.S. objections to a partial British withdrawal from Iraq. I'm Mark Knoller at the White House.
A big win for big tobacco.
The Supreme Court says $80 million is too much for the life of one smoker. I'm Howard Ehrenstein in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Peter King. British Prime Minister Tony Blair is set to announce the pullout of about 1,500 troops from Iraq, reportedly in the next few weeks. Retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland is a CBS News military consultant.
There's about 8,000 British forces still in and around Basra area. The reduction of 1,500 would be roughly slightly less than a quarter of the force there. There is some talk they might reduce by an additional 3,000 by the end of the current calendar year, which would cut the size of the British force in half.
Blair has been the president's biggest supporter during the war. CBS News White House correspondent Mark Knoller has reaction.
To hear the White House tell it the planned withdrawal of some British troops is a sign of success in Iraq. An official says it shows that the situation in southern Iraq, where British troops are deployed, has improved well enough to let Iraqi forces take over. The official says that's exactly what the U.S. hopes will happen in other parts of the country. The decision comes as no surprise. We're told President Bush discussed the matter earlier in the day in a secure video hookup with British Prime Minister Blair.
Now this.
Out of ink? Run into Office Depot. With over 500 ink toner and fax supplies guaranteed in-store and thousands more online, Office Depot has what you need at unbeatable prices. Save more by recycling empty ink and toner cartridges. When you think ink, let Office Depot lend you a hand. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Whoa, Office Depot.
See store for details.
Buying a used car can be filled with pitfalls, but there's one sure way to avoid stumbling. Buy a Honda certified used car. Only well-maintained late-model Hondas are eligible. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. Plus now, you can get low APR financing on all certified used Honda Odyssey and Pilot models. Feeling a little more sure-footed, aren't we? Honda certified used cars. Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
The Supreme Court has tossed out a huge damage award to a woman who sued cigarette maker Philip Morris after her husband's death from cancer. CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein is in Washington.
In a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court set a $79.5 million award to the widow of a Marlboro smoker is excessive, and Quentin Regal, who represents manufacturers, is pleased.
It's a significant improvement in the law because it prevents an individual plaintiff from converting a single case into kind of a class action case.
But Stanton Glantz, a tobacco industry critic, says the cigarette company got off easy.
It's a license. Kill. Basically, effective immunity for the tobacco companies.
The Supreme Court said Philip Morris can only be punished for the smoker who brought the case. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
Jesse Williams died of cancer 9 years ago after 45 years as a two-pack-a-day smoker. Closing arguments today in the trial of former vice presidential aide Scooter Libby. Here's CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
Closing arguments got personal when prosecutor Peter Zeidenberg reminded jurors of what defense lawyer Ted Wells told them when the case opened, that there was a White House conspiracy to make Libby a sacrificial lamb. Did you hear any evidence about a conspiracy to scapegoat Mr. Libby, he asked, and then added, there was no such evidence. When Wells got his turn, he argued Libby believed he was being sacrificed, was, quote, ticked off, and sought help from Vice President Cheney. In Wells' words, only an innocent person would do that.
It's been a week since the start of the JetBlue meltdown, and while the carrier is still not quite back up to speed, its chairman says he has a plan. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive has some of the details.
Some JetBlue passengers want to move on.
I just want an apology.
But JetBlue has a reputation to repair, now unveiling a customer bill of rights. Discount vouchers for delays, starting with $25 for a 30-minute delay.
In 3 hours, we're going to pay a $100 voucher, even if it's our fault or if it's not our fault.
David Neelman, JetBlue's chief executive, pledging at 5 hours you'll be off the plane with a voucher for the full flight cost. Why don't passengers get cash? David Stempler of the Air Travelers Association.
Giving out coupons ensures that they come back to your airline and give them a second chance.
Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
Drug maker Merck says it's suspending its campaign to make the inoculation of adolescent girls with its new cervical cancer vaccine mandatory for school attendance. Doctors and parents have criticized the effort. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated...
You don't get to do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready? New rule number one. Enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in Queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
Studios in New York City. Live. This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
My God, it's Mardi Gras and I'm on the main float.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Mardi Gras. It's Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, February 20th, 2007. 6 minutes past the hour, this is our special celebration of Mardi Gras show. We're taking a closer look at the city where carnival is king. Coming up this hour, we'll be joined by writer and death row lawyer Billy Southern from the Capitol Appeals Project. We'll take a look at some of New Orleans' white secret societies and their carnival crew traditions with a woman who gave up her chance at a Mardi Gras crown. It's all coming up this hour. more. But first, quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on The Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. On yesterday's show, I mentioned a story that I thought might blow up, I said, in the Arabic language press, even if it didn't blow up in the American press. I think that's turning out to be true. We now have some more details on this story. It does seem to be causing a furor in Iraq. A 20-year-old Iraqi Sunni woman from the Amil neighborhood in Baghdad said on Al Jazeera on Monday night, that while her husband was away, members of the Public Order Brigade of the Iraqi Interior Ministry stormed into her house in Baghdad. They accused her of providing food for militants, and then she says they took her to a local police garrison and raped her. The woman is a Sunni. As I mentioned, the Interior Ministry is pretty much all Shiite. A Sunni insurgent group calling itself the Islamic Army in Iraq announced in response to her allegations that they're starting a new military campaign to avenge her alleged rape. They're calling it the Sabreen Campaign, which is the woman's first name. The woman told Al Jazeera she was treated by Americans after the assault. The U.S. military says they know nothing about that. One Iraqi nurse did come forward and say that she treated the woman. Sunni politicians are blaming the Shiite-dominated government, and the Shiite prime minister, Nouri al-Maliki, has now responded. Nouri al-Maliki put out a statement today which said it's all a fabrication. Quote, "It has been shown after medical examinations that the woman has not been subjected to any sexual attack whatsoever, and that there are three outstanding arrest warrants against her, issued by security agencies. After the allegations have been proven to be false, the prime minister has ordered that the officers accused be rewarded." End quote. Rewarded? Rewarded. An aide to the Sunni vice president of Iraq disputed the prime minister's statement. Here's Robert Reed reporting from Baghdad.
Sunni politicians were quick to respond to the allegations and condemn the government, saying that this was an example of the cultural genocide that the Shiite-led government had been waging.
Cultural genocide of the Shiite-led government. Allegations like that coming from the Sunni vice president of the Iraqi government. Yeah, this is already a nightmare. This could turn into an even bigger nightmare very quickly. And hey, remember the other war? There's been a ton of news, actually, at least a ton of violence reported in Afghanistan and in the tribal regions on the Afghan-Pakistan border. On Friday, a roadside bomb killed a doctor who was in charge of a local polio immunization campaign. On Saturday, a suicide bomber blew himself up inside a district courtroom and killed 15 people, including a senior judge. Yesterday, Islamic militants left a headless, limbless corpse on the side of the road in North Waziristan with a note pinned to it that said the dead guy was a spy for America. Also yesterday, the New York Times reported that a town in Farah province in Afghanistan was taken over by the Taliban when they attacked and local police abandoned their posts in all directions. Today, the Associated Press says NATO retook that town. In Khost province in southern Afghanistan today, a suicide bomber dressed as a doctor blew himself up inside a hospital and wounded six American troops. The Taliban claimed responsibility for that attack and for killing an American soldier yesterday. I have not yet seen any notice about a soldier's death from the U.S. military yet. Over the border in Pakistan, a man murdered a Pakistani woman politician today. The welfare minister in one Pakistani state, he said that Allah does not want women to be politicians. But fear not, at least progress is being made in the region due to our modernizing and moderating influence. In central Kabul, for example, today, Afghan authorities raided dozens of guest houses and arrested 14 people for serving or drinking alcohol. They also confiscated 750 bottles of what I'm sure was Kabul's finest hooch. The Washington Post today followed up on its two-part scoop on the Walter Reed Army Medical Center scandal. They said that Walter Reed staff started fixing some stuff at the worst building yesterday, at Building 18. The guy whose totally mold-caked walls from Building 18 was shown on the front page of the Sunday Washington Post. They moved him out of that room. Now, if only every one of the 600,000 disabled vets listed on the backlog of the VA health system could be on the front page of the Sunday Washington Post like Moldy Room Guy, then maybe, you know, those 600,000 disabled troops could get some of the treatment that we promised these guys they'd get when they signed up to take bullets for their country. And finally, you know that Sirius and XM want to merge, right? Making one big happy satellite radio company instead of the two we have now. I don't like, honestly, if you listen to the show, you probably know, I don't like spending a lot of time talking about radio on the radio. right? But I do have just a couple tiny little kernels of information I think you should take with you to your next barroom conversation about the satellite radio thing. Number one, apparently XM and Sirius have been in talks for a long time now, but they only decided to announce now and get this thing moving because both companies agreed they'd have a better chance getting the merger approved with Bush as president rather than if a Democrat were elected in 08. Apparently, they think that through Democratic eyes, this might look like a monopoly, but through Republican eyes, it might not. Also, in order to prove that a merged XM and Sirius wouldn't be a satellite radio monopoly, apparently the companies will have to prove that iPods are their competition. So you can't call only having one satellite radio company a monopoly because there are other ways to listen to sound in the world. How can there be a monopoly? And finally, from the perspective of fans, you wonder how something like this is going to affect the biggest stars in satellite radio, people like Howard Stern, for example. Well, Mel Karmazin, the guy who would be head of the new merged company, said he has been trying and trying and trying to reach Howard Stern to tell him about the new plans, but he hasn't gotten through to him yet because Howard's on vacation. I'm not saying I'm for it or against it. For one thing, you shouldn't trust me on this anyway since we're on XM. But I do have to say I admire any man whose vacation is so deep he cannot be reached to be told of the $5 billion deal his company is doing. Speaking of massive market power, we now turn to Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. In college basketball, for the first time in school history, Wisconsin is ranked number one in the new Associated Press poll with a smoking 26-2 record. Ohio State is ranked second, and they play each other in Columbus on Sunday. Badger-Buckeye brawl in the NFL. North Turner has been hired to replace Marty Schottenheimer as coach of the San Diego Chargers. Number of Super Bowls North Turner has won? Zero. Also, Tony Dungy will return to coach the Indianapolis Colts next season. Number of Super Bowls Tony Dungy has won? One. Advantage Colts. In spring training, today's big important baseball story is whether Yankee teammates Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter are as close as friends as they used to be. Apparently, the entire press corps has just enrolled in middle school. Of his relationship with Jeter, A-Rod told a swarm of breathless reporters, quote, "People start assuming that things were a lot worse than what they are, which they're not, but they're obviously not as great as they used to be. We were like blood brothers." Well, that was before you went 4-for-41 without an RBI in your last 12 playoff games. Jeter's just not that into you. Finally, Donald Trump and World Wrestling Entertainment owner Vince McMahon will each pick a wrestler to represent them in the ring April 1st at WrestleMania 23. If their pick is beaten in the Battle of the Billionaires, the loser will get his head shaved after the match.
Oh, please.
Of course, in Trump's case, they'll have to kill that thing on his head first. Rachel?
Thank you, Kent. Although, think about what a better country America would be if Donald Trump were bald.
Would it?
We'd
would
be a better
it?
Country. We would.
All right. Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Kent. 15 minutes past the hour. This is we're going to return to our special Mardi Gras coverage in just a moment. My pal Billy Southern, writer and death row attorney from the Capitol Appeals Project, will be joining us live next from New Orleans. It's the Rachel Maddow Show.
It's Mardi Gras on the Rachel Maddow Show.
Here's an important toll-free number for anyone struggling with more than $15,000 in student loan debt. 1-866-600-2138.
Student Loan Consolidation Center. How can I help you?
Yeah, I just graduated in May, but I'm thousands of dollars in debt. Can you help?
We could reduce your monthly payments by up to 50% with a federally guaranteed consolidation loan. I can tell you if you qualify right away. Student Loan Consolidation Center.
Hi. I've heard that consolidating my son's loans may make good financial sense. How does your program work?
It's easy. I combine your loans into a federally guaranteed loan at an affordable fixed rate that may be tax deductible. There are no fees, and you could lower your monthly payments by up to 50%.
All over America, people are calling the Student Loan Consolidation Center and reducing loan payments by up to 50%. You can too. Call toll-free 1-866-600-2138 now for a free consultation. 1-866-600-2138. Call now.
It's all about...
New rule. Stop whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it, extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Welcome back to Mardi Gras on the Rachel Maddow Show.
Welcome back. It is 19 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
It's so funny.
It's just funny to think that, like, we're having Mardi Gras here. We're not at all. We're in a beige studio in New York. I feel like we're celebrating it by remote control. I wish we were there.
Me too.
Yeah. I tried to go. You remember when I was supposed to go down to New Orleans this past week, and I said I was going to tape some interviews, and we were going to run them for a special Mardi Gras show? Part of that was that I wanted to go to New Orleans for taping those interviews and doing this special show. The part of it that I didn't talk about was that it was also my friend Billy's 30th birthday party, and he was having a really big party, and I really wanted to go. Billy Southern is a staff attorney with the Capital Appeals Project. He's also the author of a forthcoming very good book called Down in New Orleans, Reflections on a Drowned City. He joins us live from New Orleans today. Hi, Billy.
Hi, happy Mardi Gras. We missed you. Not only did you miss an amazing cocktail evening with a Crimean cup a la Marmeras at my party, but you also missed the opportunity to run into Howard Stern, who was, in fact, here in New Orleans on his vacation, dressed as a witch down at the Saturn Bar.
Oh, my God. And that's why he couldn't be reached to be told about the $5 billion XM Sirius deal.
He looked very busy.
That's awesome. How is Mardi Gras this year compared to last year? Obviously, more Howard Stern this year than last year, but how do you feel this year?
I love Mardi Gras. You know, I kind of feel like if you're a person who doesn't enjoy Mardi Gras, there's not going to be much in life that you will enjoy. You know, so it, New Orleans is consistently an amazing sort of celebration of the city and its culture. And this year it was even more robust than it was last year, which was a sort of a nice sort of intimate Mardi Gras. But this year it sort of went off like gangbusters.
I've been reading the newswires and the rolling blog at the Times Picayune website at NOLA.com, and I always like to when they describe people's costumes and stuff. So far, my favorite is the 49 and 50 year old women in nuns' habits holding camouflage capes and signs that denoted that they were the angry little sisters of the apocalypse.
That's a hot look.
Yeah, I think so. I think that wouldn't work just for Mardi Gras. That'd work anytime.
Yeah, I think it's business casual.
Billy, there's been so much national on the occasion of Mardi Gras media this week. It seems like the hook this year is about the crime rate and murders. And we've talked about the crime rate and the crime situation and murders in New Orleans, specifically the murder of your friend Helen Hill last month. We've talked about that on the show before. How do you feel about the New Orleans is Murder City USA coverage that we're seeing this year?
It breaks my heart to see that, you know, because I do love the city so much. But the reality is that that is what's going on here, that last year we had 81 murders per 100,000 residents, so we had 162 murders. If you compare that to New York had about 5 murders per 100,000 residents.
Mm.
So as a average citizen of New Orleans, your odds of being murdered are about 15 times more than if you were a New York City citizen. And those are staggering. Those are staggering figures that should really horrify Americans. New Orleans has about twice the homicide rate as its second closest runner-up, which is Detroit, with about 40 murders per 100,000 residents.
Right.
So we really are sort of down here at the sort of the, it feels like sometimes the end of the world, with you know, with these sort of social problems that you know that are sort of tearing apart the city. Today, when I was driving around downtown in the Bywater neighborhood, I saw someone, which is pretty close to where Helen lived. I saw someone had scrolled graffiti on the wall, and it said "Stop crime, end poverty." And that's really kind of what I feel like we face here in New Orleans, is that so many other things are so out of control. As you know, your earlier guest talked about, you know, we have a housing crisis, we have an education crisis, we have a poverty crisis, we have a labor crisis, and all of these crises sort of culminate in desperation and in life really sort of being cheap and undervalued, and sadly, you know, we have what I think it could fairly be characterized as a sort of a human rights crisis down here with regard to, you know, the safety of our residents.
And looking at it that way gets you to the difference between crime and punishment. I mean, you can talk about the fact that the murder rate right now and the crime rate right now is so, it's in itself is affecting the future of the city. It's affecting certainly the national image of the city and people's willingness to be, willingness to be empathetic toward the plight of the city. Absolutely, that's going to have real effects. But then there's also the fact that there's tons of people who are being picked up and arrested in New Orleans and held for months at a time without ever being charged and having to be released by law because of that, simply because they've been held for 60 days without being charged. I mean, the crime situation is out of control, but the punishment system is absolutely broken as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's the whole criminal justice system here has basically fallen apart. If you're a tourist and you get pulled over for a ticket, and it turns out you have some other outstanding ticket that you in fact paid, it might show up wrong in the computer at the police computer, and then you'll end up in jail indefinitely without access to an attorney, without access to counsel, in a prison that is not even vaguely habitable. Not only are we sort of incredibly ineffective in fighting real and very dramatic crime, we're actually running people through the system in sort of an awful and ineffective system who have no business being a part of it. People who are visiting town and just regular everyday New Orleanians who paid that parking ticket 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's just the incompetence in New Orleans in government is really it's a soup to nuts issue. It pops up everywhere, whether we're talking about policing or housing. It's just very sad that in this sort of criminal justice context, it simultaneously can wrongly sort of alienate people from their righteous out and about in the world by incarcerating them, or it can, by failing to sort of address complex social issues, lead to awful crimes occurring because of police incompetence, the incompetence of the district attorney's office, and just sort of general sort of failed criminal justice system. I would emphasize, however, that the police and district attorney's office here in New Orleans, just like anywhere else, are not up to the task of really controlling crime when other institutions in government, like education and housing, are not in place.
Absolutely. Billy Southern, again, I regret missing your birthday party. I insist that you hold a 30 and a half birthday this year so that I can go to the party. And I really thank you for joining us tonight. Happy Mardi Gras, Billy.
Happy Mardi Gras. You're welcome anytime.
Billy Southern, staff attorney at the Capitol Appeals Project, author of the forthcoming Down in New Orleans, Reflections on a Drowned City, reminding us that, it's not a matter of firing one bad person or fixing one problem. It's a human rights crisis in the broadest sense. And you actually need to demand accountable, functioning government and services and systems across the board in order to fix problems like this. It's the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
If you know a child, if you have a child, if you love a child, then we're asking for your help. Get to UC Davis Children's Hospital at 888-780-8811.
Real words from real people about Lifeline screening.
I was told I should see my doctor or go to the emergency room immediately. Later I said to the physician, I guess I'm pretty lucky to have had those tests. He answered, it saved your life.
In less than 1 hour, Lifeline screening checks for warning signs of stroke and vascular disease. Nearly 50% of people that suffer a stroke never have symptoms. Don't wait until it's too late. Get screened today.
The doctor said I'm one lucky guy, and if I hadn't gone to the screening, I would have been a statistic.
$129, 4 ultrasound tests, no needles, no pain.
just peace of mind.
I owe my life to you.
Mobile testing units are coming to your neighborhood. If you're over 50, make an appointment by calling 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
Lifeline screening saved my life.
Please call now. 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
You know when you open a birthday card from Grandma? She's usually good for, what, like $5? Well, now imagine that you have 100 grandmas. It feels like that.
Have you ever gotten out of your car and something catches your eye on the ground? You walk over and find a $5 bill? Okay, now pretend you find a $495 bill next to it. It's just like that.
New GEICO customers report average annual savings of $500 on their car insurance. Discover how it feels and how much you could save. Go to GEICO.com. Simple as that.
Hello?
How in the world did you do this?
Do what, Mom?
Put a picture of my precious grandson on a postage stamp.
It's not an ordinary stamp, Mom. It's a photo stamp. Now anyone can take photos of their kids, pets, or almost anything and turn them into real U.S. postage at photostamps.com. You just go to the website, customize your own photo stamps, and they'll arrive in the mail in a few days.
Imagine all the possibilities. Birth announcements, wedding invitations, holiday cards.
To make all your mail unforgettable, go to photostamps.com today. Photo stamps. Real postage. Really you.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate. And then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking. As in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Show where Fat Tuesday is really, really, really fat.
Welcome back. It is 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Happy to have you with us on this fine Fat Tuesday. Happy Mardi Gras. We're celebrating Mardi Gras, but we are also keeping our eyes on the headlines. I got a couple of stories to tell you about. The Associated Press has been taking a closer look at U.S. soldiers who have been killed in Iraq, and they've come up with some pretty sobering and interesting statistics. Nearly three-quarters of the American soldiers killed in Iraq came from towns where the per capita income was below the national average. Three-quarters. Over half of the soldiers killed in Iraq signed up, enlisted in towns where the percentage of people living in poverty topped the national average. On a per capita basis, states with mostly rural populations have suffered the highest fatalities in Iraq. We talked yesterday about a Republican Party donor who was indicted on charges of trying to fund terrorist groups. We learned a few more details about that today. From April 02 to August 04, Abdul Tawala ibn Ali al-Ishtari, also known as Michael Mixon, gave donations ranging from $500 to $5,000 to the National Republican Congressional Committee for a grand total of some $15,000. The National Republican Congressional Committee finally released a statement about that case today, saying it was not going to rush to judgment just because of the terrorism financing indictment. Keep in mind that the National Republican Congressional Committee also refused to return money contributed to it by former Congressman Mark Foley and former Congressman Bob Ney. Also, Talking Points memo muckraker, tpmmuckraker.com today, reports that Mr. al-Ishtari, a.k.a. Michael Mixon, may not be the only member of the National Republican Congressional Committee's Business Advisory Council to be indicted on terrorist-related charges. Apparently, the man who was the head of the Cambodian Freedom Fighters has also been indicted. His trial is due to start on Friday. Once again, the National Republican Congressional Committee spokesman Carl Forte says that that's another case where they are not rushing to judgment. They're waiting to see after the trial starts there to see whether that man has been convicted as well. I said his trial starts on Friday. That's not true. It starts in March. Excuse me. Finally, USA Today reports that law enforcement agencies across the country have had to upgrade their available firepower because there are more and more high-powered weapons on American streets. Many have replaced existing weapons with military-style arms. Police say the upgrades have occurred since the national ban on assault rifles expired in September 2004, which made those weapons more readily available. Those are some of the stories we're keeping an eye on today. When you think of Mardi Gras, you think of parades and beads and music and drinking and partying. But outside of New Orleans, I'm not sure that many folks know. I certainly didn't know about the white people secret societies and the invitation-only debutante balls that go with the season. Rebecca Snedeker is a New Orleans native and an inheritor of that exclusive New Orleans legacy. She has made a film about it. It's called By Invitation Only. And the secret societies she talks about are the crews, the white crews, the White Secret Society crews. Crews is K-R-E-W-E-S. And I asked Rebecca Snedeker to try to explain to me the role of these old-line carnival societies and the role that they play on Mardi Gras.
What happens is there's a group of crews, and a crew is an organization that puts on a parade or a ball during carnival season. And the crews that I was looking at are the oldest ones, which were started right before, but mostly after the Civil War. And they are secret organizations. They have secret memberships. And every year they some of them have parades and some of them don't. And the parade is really, in some way, the public walk to the private ball. So the parade is on the streets and it's for the public. And there's a sense of benevolence there that we're throwing you a party. But then the crew members retreat to the private ball, which is for friends and family. And most crews have a mock royal court of debutantes. So whatever crew members have daughters that are making their debut that year, those daughters are presented in this mock royal court. Most of them are maids, but one young woman is chosen to be the queen of the ball. And usually that means that the crew is honoring her family.
So it's kind of like prom queen on steroids, because it's not just the prom, it's secret, and you're honoring your family. So you're representing, you know, your dad or your grandfather if you're picked as queen, and it's secret. So it just seems incredibly fraught and archaic.
Yes, and it's always helpful for me to hear people's responses, because it's so normal to me. One thing that's funny is, you know, you're growing up around these, you know, I grew up around images of the women in my family dressed in very elaborate gowns with scepters and crowns. And as I grew older, it started to occur to me to wonder what impact that has on a young woman or a girl, that, you know, many of us dream about being princess and queens, but in few places is there the growing reality that that will happen to you, and that you will perform this ritual where you will be the queen for at least, you know, for a day.
And what kind of benefits accrue to you if you become a queen? I mean, obviously you get fussed over to an incredible degree because that's your role for the day, but what else comes with that package?
That's a great question. I think most who are queens would humbly say that it's really you're doing something for your family. You're sort of like you're a vehicle for the continuation of these events. I think in the larger picture, what I've considered is sort of like as these groups network and maintain a degree of economic power, what are we benefiting from by participating in the traditions and the men and women? And there's a strong sense of community and loyalty. There's a lot of gift exchanging and helping each other out that can happen. That's sometimes beautiful in communities, but because this ritual was started in the name of white supremacy, these older crews, for me, it's hard for the meaning of them today to get very far from what its source of origin was.
When you say they were founded in the name of white supremacy, what do you mean specifically? Obviously, they're founded right after the Civil War, and so there's all that history, but how do you mean that specifically?
So these oldest groups, most of them started after the war, and when they started dressing up as royalty, most of what I've read and what scholars are saying is that there was this time in New Orleans during Reconstruction. It was after the war, and there was an interracial government that had been instituted here after we lost the war, the Confederates. And so this group, for the first time, didn't have political power, and they took this fantastical time of carnival, which is also escapist, and started dressing up as royalty, and it was a way that they re-imaged themselves on top in a position of power.
Hmm.
And they had, the oldest crews had an overlapping membership with a group called the Crescent City White League, which overthrew in a violent coup d'etat the interracial government for a number of days. So they really were sort of dressing up. I guess one way I read that I appreciated was that these rituals of royalty were a sort of soothing tonic for the loss of the war,
mm-hmm.
and a way to start repositioning themselves in power.
Rebecca, I know that because of your family history and your father's memberships in these crews, although that's all secret and all these things, that you could have expected to have been a Mardi Gras queen, a carnival queen. And you chose not to go into that system, not to go into the debutante world. Did that cause a lot of friction between you and your family?
Actually, my parents were very accepting of it, and it was more my grandmother in the older generation that questioned that. There's a growing sense here that depending on your family, some young women choose not to participate. What I realized was that even though my parents had been supportive, and I have to laugh about this now, that I had been the first woman in my mother's family to not participate. And when I started making the film, I guess it was about 2 years in, where I realized that the real conflict was inside myself, that even though my family had accepted it, there was a curiosity about the rituals that I needed to explore, and that the laugh was really on me because I had to go make the film about it. There was a sense that for me to move forward, I needed to be aware of this history that my family has here and learn about it and learn about this ritual in order to move forward.
Yeah.
So the tradition is really larger than I.
How did you and your family fare in the storm with your houses and everybody in your family and your safety?
My family evacuated, and I was the only person in my family whose home flooded.
Mm.
And we're all safe, which I'm grateful for.
Did you get your home back, or was it totally gutted?
I'm not back there. It was gutted, and I'm in a new place here. But I'm back in the same neighborhood, which I'm really grateful for.
What neighborhood do you live in?
I'm in Mid-City, near Bayou St. John, which is very close to Jazz Fest.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Are you, I imagine it's a pretty transformed city. Do you feel like you're going to stay?
I do want to stay. And it feels wonderful to put the film out there and really spoken my truth and still be in the city. I want to be here for a long time.
You know, the story that you tell about the crews and about the secret societies and the invitation-only balls and all of this stuff, it is, it's obviously something that you grew up in the context of and you appreciate all the nuances of. It's a brand new story to most of America.
Yeah.
Really, we don't know that that's the basis. We don't, you know, when we think of Mardi Gras, we think of beads and drinking on the street and parades, and that's it. And we don't know that there's a whole nother side to it. And so the story is, it's a fascinating story about your own decisions, but I think you're also, I hope you get wide distribution for it because I think it's a story in a society that people don't know about. So thank you for the courage it must have taken to make the film. Thanks.
you for speaking with me about it.
Rebecca Snedeker is the filmmaker of By Invitation Only. By Invitation Only, thefilm.com is the website. We've linked to that today at our website at mattoonline.com, as well as information about how the DVD of the film is being distributed. This is The Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
It's Mardi Gras on The Rachel Maddow Show.
Homeowners, before you write one more check for your high interest rate debts, stop. If you want to simplify your bills and get cash, call and ask about a combo loan from America's number one home loan lender, Countrywide. It's a refinance that you could use to combine your first mortgage, your second mortgage, your car loan, and all your high-rate credit card debt into one easy loan with one low monthly payment. You get the stability of a low fixed rate, and consolidating at a lower rate could save you hundreds of dollars every month and give you the cash you need. No one can do what Countrywide can. Whatever your financial situation, don't wait for rates to go up. Call right now and ask for a combo loan. 1-800-981-2980. That's 1-800-981-2980. Countrywide Home Loans is an equal housing lender. Restrictions apply, so call and apply now. 1-800-981-2980. 1-800-981-2980.
Don't miss me.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Hi.
Good afternoon, AM 1320 KCTC, I'm Montana. Looking at the weather, we're going to see lows tonight right around 42. Highs coming up tomorrow, about 57. Some scattered showers, thunderstorms coming tomorrow. Heavy rain we are going to see on Thursday. Highs near 54, a little chillier, though. Friday and Saturday, it's going to peak back up to 57 and 60 degrees. Partly cloudy skies we have right now, 57. And our traffic, beat the traffic with News 10. Macy Court at Stockton Boulevard, there is a three-car crash that is slowing things down a little bit. Southbound Cass City Freeway for your commute home just north of P Street. There's a three-car crash. It's usually pretty slow there. Southbound 99 right past Fruit Ridge Road, we have a three-car crash. And northbound Cass City Freeway just south of H Street. Fair Oaks Boulevard at Jacob Lane, we have a two-car crash. I'm Montana at AM 1320, KCTC.
The Rachel Maddow Show. It's
49 minutes or so
past the hour. Now it's Kent Jones Now with Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline San Francisco. Speaking at the American Association for the Advancement of Science Conference, a group of astronauts, engineers, and scientists warned that an asteroid may zoom uncomfortably close to Earth in 2036. And they want the United Nations to adopt procedures for responding to this and all future asteroidal aggression. They say if the dinosaurs had a defense system in effect 65 million years ago, we'd all still be speaking Tyrannosaur. These scientists warn that an asteroid named Apophis has a 1 in 45,000 chance of striking Earth on April 13th, 2036. That's a Sunday. You might want to move your schedule around. Upon hearing of the threat posed by Apophis, the Bush administration immediately launched an attack on a completely unrelated comet. According to astronaut Ed Liu, the best approach to dealing with a potentially deadly space rock is to dispatch a spacecraft that would use gravity to alter the asteroid's course so that it would no longer threaten the Earth. the so-called gravity tractor could maintain a position near the threatening asteroid, exerting a gentle tug that over time would deflect the asteroid. I don't know if this will work, but Gravity Tractor is a really good name for an alt-country band. This is Cat Jones for the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Vigilance.
I was thinking band. You're right. It would have to be alt-country.
Gravity Tractor.
T-R-A-C-T-O-R?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like a tractor. Just like Gravity John Deere. A cat. Yeah.
Wow. Makes me think that there might be some non-gravitational tractors out there somewhere that I'm going to have to understand, and those will have to be some sort of noodly jazz fusion band names.
No, I hate them.
Yeah.
Gravity tractor.
Nice.
Everybody.
Very nice. Thank you, Kent.
Sure.
I have a pet story for you today.
Mardi Gras monkey.
Mardi Gras monkey. Actually, it's not a Mardi Gras pet story, although it is our Mardi Gras day, and we actually have one more very cool Mardi Gras thing coming up in approximately 3.5 minutes. I promise.
I'll wait.
But the pet story today is actually about St. Patrick's Day.
Oh.
St. Patrick's Day, which is coming up in a little bit less than a month, I think. I lived in England from 1995 to 1998. I was not unhappy when I lived in England, and some interesting things happened in my life during that time, and I don't regret it. However, when I moved back to the United States after having been there for 3 years, I was so happy.
Yeah.
I hadn't felt like I wanted to leave, but once I did, I realized how happy I was to be gone.
Sure.
I for a little while after I left England, I used to have nightmares that I had to go back.
Wow.
But after that, you know, I haven't really thought about it very much. I never think about wanting to live there again. I never think about wanting to visit. It hasn't been long enough. That said, I think this is the first thing that's made me want to visit.
All right.
For St. Patrick's Day, Marmite has teamed up with Guinness.
All the food groups are joining there.
Marmite, which 99% of the world finds totally disgusting, and I love. It's like this yeasty, salty spread stuff that tastes like meat that you put on toast. I know. And most people think it's disgusting. I think it's one of the most wonderful things in the world. Originally, Marmite was made from the yeast left over from the beer brewing process. They're doing a special Guinness Brewer's Yeast version of Marmite for St. Patrick's Day. It's only like 2 pounds.
Anyway. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Get your tickets now.
I know.
So you can go over and have your Guinness Marmite.
Spread.
Spread.
I know, it's so disgusting. It's even disgusting to talk about, you know?
Yeah, a little bit.
Sorry.
It's fine. No, it's fine.
Do you remember when Chuck D went to London and he brought me back that container of Marmite that was the size of my head?
I do.
You use 1 millimeter of it at a time, and he brought me back a container of it that it was literally the size of a human head.
Yeah.
I use it all the time, and it still looks brand new.
Yeah, I wanted to be a fly on the wall watching Chuck D buy Marmite for you.
I know.
That had to be good.
I know. I also have a follow-up for you, Kent, on a story that we did recently about priests playing in a soccer tournament in Sarajevo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sarajevo, that was the big priest soccer tournament. I thought, oh, the Poles won. That's interesting. There's apparently annual soccer tournaments for priests in Sarajevo. Oh, no. I've topped that story. Because apparently the Vatican is going to host, they're going to host a World Cup for priest soccer.
Oh, we should go.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be great. They're calling it the Clericus Cup. It kicks off on Saturday with the Mexicans against the Brazilians, the Mexican priests against the Brazilian priests. The final is scheduled for the end of June, and they have made a change to the rules to reflect the fact that the players in this version of the World Cup are priests. There's no red card or yellow card in these games.
They're on the honor system.
Well,
is that it?
There's a different card that they're giving to the priests. It's a blue card. And instead of getting a yellow card, which is a warning, or two yellow cards, which gives you the red card, or a red card, which throws you out, right? Instead, if you're a priest and you commit a foul in the priest World Cup that the Vatican is hosting, you get a blue card. And the blue card makes you leave the pitch for 5 minutes to have a cooling off period where you can reflect on what you have done.
Wow. We should have that here, I think. I think it's a great idea.
5 minutes to reflect on the bad thing you did, and then you get to come back and play again. That's beauty.
Did you kick Father Benjamin's shins? Did you? I think you did.
I think you did.
And I think I'm going to have to give you a blue card because I love you. I'm giving you the blue card now. This is not about anger. This
is about you reflecting on why you play the game. And then you can, then we'll have a corner kick.
Sit down, Father, for you have sinned.
God bless you.
Yes. Very good.
Goal!
Okay. It is 56 minutes past the hour. This has been our special Mardi Gras coverage here on Fat Tuesday here on The Rachel Maddow Show. We think it is only fitting to leave you actually in the loving arms of Louis Armstrong and his version of When the Saints Go Marching In. It's The Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio, paying attention to New Orleans year-round, but especially on Mardi Gras.
Sisters and brothers, this is Reverend Satchmo getting ready to beat out this mellow sermon for you. My text this evening is When the Saints Go Marching In. Here come Brother Hickenbottom down the aisle with his trombone. Blow it, boy.
Show on Air America Radio.
So let's say you're on the road for work, or for not work, or whatever. You're not in your office, which is a good thing. But alas, you need to send or receive a fax, which is a thing that seems utterly rooted to one physical place in the world. How can you work on the road and deal with faxes at the same time? Aha! Behold the magic of eFax. eFax lets you send faxes from your laptop, lets you receive faxes as attachments in your email inbox. So you can send and receive faxes from an airport, from a coffee shop, while hanging upside down and having a man in a funny hat whip you with soapy oak leaves. Anywhere you can take your laptop, eFax can hook you up. Right now, eFax is offering a free 30-day trial for my listeners. To get this 30-day free trial, go to www.efax.com, click on the radio button at the top of the page, and type in my first name, Rachel. It takes 2 minutes to get up and running, and you can start sending and receiving faxes free for 30 days. Go to www.efax.com, click on the radio microphone, type in Rachel for your free 30-day trial.
News. I'm Peter King. British Prime Minister Tony Blair has been the president's greatest ally during the war in Iraq, but now he's reportedly set to announce the pullout of about 1,500 troops from southern Iraq. In London, CBS News correspondent Mark Phillips says the withdrawal is being billed as a sign of progress.
This will be depicted as a successful policy of the pacifying of an area by the British troops and of the handing over of authority in that area to Iraqi troops. It's significant, though, that at this stage the British are only talking about withdrawing by the end of the year down to around 4,000 troops and say they'll keep those troops in the country for contingencies depending on what happens.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House. The reduction of British forces in southern Iraq is seen here as a sign of improvement. An official says it shows that British forces feel confident enough to turn over their security duties to Iraqi troops. That's the U.S. objective, too, in other parts of the country. President Bush discussed the British drawdown earlier in the day with British Prime Minister Blair.
A big win for Philip Morris. The Supreme Court has tossed out a nearly $80 million award to a woman who sued the cigarette maker after her smoker husband died of cancer. The court ruled that a jury could only punish a defendant for damage to the person suing, not his or her survivors. CBS News correspondent Wyatt Andrews says the implications could be big.
What's most likely to happen now is that a new jury instruction will have to go out in cases where the company has lost. And the jury instruction will be something like, you can't punish this company for all the other people that it hurt, even though it might have hurt other folks. You can't add to the money. That's likely not to eliminate huge jury verdicts, but it will probably diminish a lot of them.
The jury gets the Scooter Libby case in the morning. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has more on today's closing arguments at the trial of Dick Cheney's former right-hand man.
Sometimes with passion, sometimes in tedious detail, lawyers for both sides made this a case about memory and trust. Doggedly attacking the credibility of prosecution witnesses, defense lawyers insisted nothing has been proved beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not even close, attorney William Jeffress argued. His partner Ted Wells warned jurors they can't erase a wrong verdict. My client's life will be destroyed. Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald told jurors to use their common sense. Among his final words, Libby stole the truth from the judicial system. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, U.S. District Court, Washington.
The president says he wants his new head of intelligence to find more recruits who have the skills to spot terrorists and potential trouble. Retired Vice Admiral Mike McConnell was sworn in as the second director of national intelligence.
The time needed to develop a terrorist plot, communicate it around the globe, and put it into motion has been drastically reduced. The timeline is no longer a calendar, it is a watch.
He says old policies have overruled common sense when it comes to hiring the right people with the right skills. Wall Street, the Dow is up just over 19 points, the NASDAQ up nearly 17. This is CBS News.
So, you're a consultant?
Yes, sir.
What's with the wall of sticky notes?
It's my small business accounting system. Unpaid invoices go on the purple ones.
And the green?
New customers.
So, unpaid bills are the yellow ones.
How'd you know?
I took a shot. You know, there's an easier way to manage your business.
Yeah?
Yeah, QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you write checks, send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't.
I'll switch. So, need a couple hundred sticky notes?
I'm going to pass on that. QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at OfficeMax, Best Buy, or Amazon.com.
Okay, ooh, 17-inch aluminum wheels, all-new Chrysler Sebring Touring, standard. Toyota Camry LE, not available. Honda Accord LX, not available. Yes, essential stain-resistant fabric Sebring, standard. Other guys, not available. There's got to be something, huh? Steering wheel, Sebring, standard. Toyota and Honda, standard.
The all-new Chrysler Sebring, completely redesigned inside and out, with many exclusive features. As described, $21,110. MSRP excludes tax.
A judge declares a mistrial in the medical malpractice lawsuit filed by Notre Dame football coach Charlie Weiss. WBZ's Mark Caddick has more on the abrupt and strange ending.
An expert witness was giving testimony in support of Mass General doctors Richard Hoden and Charles Ferguson when all of a sudden a juror signaled to a bailiff he was in distress. He moaned, struggled to breathe, and immediately Hoden, Ferguson, and their witness leaped to the juror's aid. The judge agreed with Charlie Weiss's attorney to declare a mistrial. Attorney Michael Mohn says he argued it reluctantly.
The last thing in the world you want is a jury making a decision based upon something that none of the parties could control.
The doctor's attorney, William Daly Jr., was upset.
And we were very optimistic that there was going to be a good result.
Both sides say it could be months before a new trial begins.
The California judges ruled that O.J. Simpson's income from past movie, TV, and commercial work should go directly to the family of murder victim Ron Goldman, but the judge also rejected the family's bid to collect Simpson's earnings on future projects. Peter King, CBS.
If you're America.
remodeling your kitchen.
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
Listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guest tonight is author and historian William Mann.
I would live like a free man. Shake the chains from my soul. Change my direction to heal my reflection. Stepping out into the glow.
Welcome to the program. Well, one of the great pleasures of doing this broadcast is that it allows me to speak with people that really interest me. One of those people is my guest today. William J. Mann is an author and historian, primarily in the area of film. His most recent book, which I could not put down when I read it over my recent vacation, is an extraordinary biography of the late, great Katharine Hepburn. It's called Kate, the Woman Who Was Hepburn, and I can't recommend it strongly enough. It covers not just the screen career of a great actress, but it's also a rich and detailed journey through our nation's cultural and political history. From her mother's early campaigns for women's rights and reproductive freedom, through the House Un-American Activities Committee's investigations of communist sympathizers, through the civil rights movement, sexual revolution of the 60s and 70s, Katharine Hepburn was a touchstone for our mores and our morals. This book captures all of that brilliantly, and offers insight into the many facets of a woman that I, for one, thought I knew. But after reading this book, I realized that she was so much more than the image that she herself so carefully crafted for more than seven decades. William Mann, welcome to Politically Direct.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm given to hyperbole, but in this case, it's unnecessary. I really love this book, and I want people to sort of share the journey that I just went through, and then I want them to, you know, turn off their radios. It's sort of a network moment. Turn off your televisions, open the window, and say, get me this book. But I want to start actually by asking a little bit about you. I had read your book about William Haynes, Wisecracker, which I loved. But in reading a little about your background, I see you actually worked on Capitol Hill. This is a program about politics often, so what's your background?
I did work in Capitol Hill. It seems like another lifetime ago. I was right out of school, and I got a job with a former congressman, Sam Gaydenson from Connecticut.
Sure.
Great guy, and worked for him for a little while. And then I worked for the House Subcommittee on Telecommunications. It was in the Rayburn House office building way down in the basement, and I never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
It was an experience, but I quickly realized that congressional politics weren't for me, and I went back to graduate school.
Well, actually, that's where Republicans have kept Democrats for the last 6 years, in
exactly.
the basement of every
exactly.
building, and they didn't see the light of day. Finally,
exactly.
they're coming back into the light.
Thank God for that.
Sam Gaydenson was a wonderful member of Congress. As I recall, he kept running and either winning or losing very narrowly.
It was tight because the 2nd District in Connecticut is a back-and-forth district. It can go Republican, it can go Democrat. But Sam won for many years, and he represented the district very well for, I think it was probably, close to 20 years.
Yeah, no, he was definitely a good man, and I guess it's part of what we now see in this movement. Connecticut obviously was a swing state in this last election.
That's right.
A number of House races that were right there on the edge. Mm-hmm. Well, so we're all very fortunate that you decided to go back to graduate school because that led you back into writing.
Right.
And how did you get into film?
Well, I've always loved movies, and that was, goes way back to when I was a child, and I would beg my parents to, let me stay up until, 11 o'clock because they were showing some great old classic on television. And, that was before the days of VCRs and all of that. And then I began writing for magazines as a freelancer, and I started writing for places like Architectural Digest, which covers Hollywood every issue, once a year in their Hollywood issue. And I found William Haynes and finally did the book on him. And then
who don't know who William Haynes was.
William Haynes was the number one star in 1930. People have forgotten him for many reasons. But he was really wonderful in his day. He had been a big silent star and was one of the first talkie stars. But he was gay and refused to play the Hollywood game.
Unapologetically gay, at least in his off-screen life.
Absolutely he was. And was finally given an ultimatum by Louis B. Mayer at MGM that said either your boyfriend has to go or your career goes. And Billy chose the boyfriend and went on to a very successful, later career as an interior decorator. But his story, I thought, really resonated, really told something about the gay experience in Hollywood, so that's why I did his story.
Well, it's a perfect segue for this book, because, again, I thought I knew so much about Katharine Hepburn, and, Katharine Hepburn had been, as I said at the outset, something of a touchstone for me in so many ways, her screen roles, her off-screen persona. But what you capture here is a woman who actually might have been happier had she kept the name she used for herself growing up, which was Jimmy.
Right.
She took a boy's name as a child and really thought of herself as a boy.
She did all her life. Even very, very late in her life, I found an unproduced screenplay that she wrote.
Is that Me and Phyllis?
Me and Phyllis, right. It was about her and her longtime companion, caregiver, Phyllis Wilborn. And she says in there that, in my heart, I'm still Jimmy Hepburn. And I really think if we understand that boy, that character she created as a young girl, I think we can understand the true Katharine Hepburn.
Well, she'd made choices, and you talked about the choice that William Haynes made. She made a choice early on to leave Jimmy Hepburn behind, and then in many respects she left. She was known to her family as Kath.
And
that was sort of the girl that she became, but she left that behind to create what she described as the creature, and that was Kate. That was this larger-than-life persona that transcended sort of normal roles and sexuality and anything. It became, larger than life.
That's right.
Explain that.
Well, I think to be a movie star, there are compromises you have to make. To be very famous, you have to put certain parts of your life aside, and I think people who make that contract with fame understand that. And for William Haynes, it ultimately was too much for him to make. He wasn't willing to make those compromises. But anyone, you ask any of these movie stars today, they live a life very, very different than you and I do, and they become something that the public wants them to be. And that's the trade-off. If for this great fame, for this immortality. And Katharine Hepburn, as a very young girl, wanted to be famous. That was what drove her.
More than she wanted to be an actress. She really, her ambition early on, we all think of her now, and you detail it in this book, that she lived for her art. She would choose, she did Shakespeare, she did O'Neill, she did these incredible parts. But early on, she wanted to be a star, above all else.
In fact, she says that. She admits as much. She says, I wanted to be famous. I didn't really care in what, but I just wanted to be famous. And so she knew that. So she knew that Jimmy, this persona, this masculine tomboy persona that was really her, wouldn't play to the masses. And she had to come back and give the public exactly what they wanted if she were to become this institution, this American icon, which she did brilliantly.
Who were her parents? She was so often later in life heard to talk about the influence they had on her. She told us to Dick Cavett in that lengthy interview she did. Mm-hmm. Who was Thomas Hepburn, Dr. Thomas Hepburn?
Dr. Thomas Hepburn was a physician in Hartford, Connecticut, who specialized in the treatment of venereal disease. Now, in 1910, 1912, this was unheard of for a doctor of the upper classes to be ministering to these immigrant women with venereal disease.
Couldn't even talk about it.
You couldn't, absolutely not. It was horrible. And he made a name for himself in championing the treatments for venereal disease. He was a bohemian maverick. Hartford society looked down at him because, you know, he just did these kinds of déclassé things. But, you know, he was a very, very charismatic man that left a huge impact on all of his children's lives.
And his wife, Kit, yes. Also Catherine, she had a huge impact on all women's lives for the role she played.
Right, absolutely. And in fact, you know, I actually have, you know, Katharine Hepburn is known as this feminist icon, but in fact, it's her mother who really deserves the label of feminist heroine because, you know, she was very early on, was a suffragist for the women's right to vote in the 19-teens and the 1920s, and then became a crusader for legalized birth control. So Katharine Hepburn grew up in a family of radicals, really, and that really imprinted her own life.
My guest is William Mann. He is the author of Kate, the Woman Who Was Hepburn. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
She left to marry some tomcat. Ain't the cool truth.
Homeowners, before you write one more check for your high interest rate debts, stop. If you want to simplify your bills and get cash, call and ask about a combo loan from America's number one home loan lender, Countrywide. It's a refinance that you could use to combine your first mortgage, your second mortgage, your car loan, and all your high-rate credit card debt into one easy loan with one low monthly payment. You get the stability of a low fixed rate, and consolidating at a lower rate could save you hundreds of dollars every month and give you the cash you need. No one can do what Countrywide can. Whatever your financial situation, don't wait for rates to go up. Call right now and ask for a combo loan. 1-800-981-2980. That's 1-800-981-2980. Countrywide Home Loans is an equal housing lender. Restrictions apply, so call and apply now. 1-800-981-2980. 1-800-981-2980.
People have to start. The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to. Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
With a big announcement
from Devisa House.
Was fine with his wife working outside the home and championing the rights of women, but he expected her to be home by the time he got home so she could have dinner waiting for him.
This morning I expected President
Bush named
Tony Snow.
Catherine Hepburn grew up with this kind of conflicting notion of what a woman's role was in society, that yes, you could be independent, but ultimately its final authority rested with a man, and she defied that patriarchal authority when she decided to become a
His job is to help explain those decisions.
The person who cared her life during that early period, when she left home, wasn't women. And he finds throughout this book that so many women were really key influences, and as you mentioned, Phyllis Wilburn early on was her companion for 40 years.
Right.
But Laura Harding, and this is, I almost wanted to read another book about Laura Harding.
Yes,
you must have been fascinated by her. Tell all of us who Laura Harding was.
Well, Laura Harding came from the uppermost crust of society. I mean, she was it. She was a Park Avenue heiress. You know, she was the classic archetype of American aristocracy.
Money went back before the Civil War, right?
Oh, yes, way before the Civil War, and it was just, you know, old money. She grew up in, you know, several homes and the main line in Philadelphia and also in New York City. And Kate was just absolutely smitten by this world. She was just absolutely found this intoxicating to be living in such a high society world. And Laura was very similar to Kate. She wanted to be an actress. She was a tomboy. She was a bohemian in her lifestyle. And they just fit together like a hand in glove.
And they became what anyone who looked at that contemporaneously would have had to said was a couple.
Oh, absolutely. And they were treated as such in those very sophisticated New York theatrical circles of the 1920s and early 1930s.
When they came to Los Angeles in the very sophisticated early days, pre-code days, the same. But neither of them, and I found this so interesting, and of course this is what's so difficult to look at history from our own perspective now, and you do it so well in this book, but neither of them would have let themselves be called lesbian.
Right, exactly. And that's really important to understand, because labels don't work when you try to put them on these people. Lesbian, bisexual, transgender, none of those quite explain who Katharine Hepburn was, because of course she did fall in love with men, you know, very passionately, but her most rewarding, her most fulfilling relationships were always with women. And lesbian connotated a very different sense back then than it does today. I mean, lesbian then was very working class. It was seen as mannish. It was seen as degenerate.
Again, déclassé.
A very déclassé, yes. And certainly a woman like Laura Harding would, you know, could never have been a lesbian, because that just was impossible for a woman of her standing to be a lesbian. Of course, she could fall in love with women, but that didn't make her a lesbian. So we have to understand, and we have to use the vocabulary of the contemporary times.
What's so interesting about your doing this, and you did it to some degree also in the book that I read about William Haynes, is to understand that our language actually somewhat limits us from understanding how people live their lives.
That's right.
It probably does today too, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and it's very difficult to have a conversation about the shifting social constructions of sexual desire. I mean, that, you know, most people just kind of say, well, I don't know what you're talking about that. But, of course, being gay, being lesbian, being heterosexual meant something very, very different 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, and certainly 60 or 70 years ago. So we have to understand the context of the times if we're going to understand the people's lives.
We've had Gore Vidal on this program a number of times, and he is, of course, someone who famously says there is no such thing as
right.
a homosexual.
Right.
There are homosexual acts, there are heterosexual acts, but to define someone that way, and he has always refused to be so defined.
Right.
I think, as he has been most of his life, he's ahead of the curve still. And, you know, I have worked in gay rights causes much of my political life, but I understand that there is a limitation. You don't necessarily help people to move beyond those labels when you're in the middle of the fight. And that's that dichotomy. You're trying to establish that perhaps there shouldn't be job discrimination, or that there should be equal treatment for relationships,
right.
and therefore you have to make these declaratives, but they are limiting.
Right. It's a political act to declare oneself gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. That was a political act that Katharine Hepburn certainly never found necessary for her life. It was certainly not part of her worldview.
And actually, but she encouraged others not to do it.
Yes.
Her longtime friend George Cukor was, I found this so fascinating, when he was finally late in his life going to write something of a candid autobiography,
right,
she went in, grabbed the pages, and said, no, 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 this is all wrong, and talked
exactly
him out of doing it.
Right, right. Because she thought that was absurd. Why would you have to do something? Why would you have to declare such a part of yourself when it's not so vital to your sense of who you are? For George Cukor, he was moving forward with the times. Katharine Hepburn was not. And she couldn't understand why that was important to him.
We're talking with William Mann. He is the author of several novels. He is the author of a number of acclaimed books on Hollywood film history, including Wisecracker, The Life and Times of William Haynes, Behind the Screen, How Gays and Lesbians Shaped Hollywood, Edge of Midnight, a wonderful book about the life of John Schlesinger, and currently Kate, the woman who was Hepburn. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about Spencer Tracy. Stay with us. I'm David Bender. We'll be right back.
The times we have.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
The children at the UC Davis Children's Hospital.
Real words
from
real people.
888-780-8811.
I was told I should see my doctor or go to the emergency room immediately. Later I said to the physician, I guess I'm pretty lucky to have had those tests. He answered, it saved your life.
In less than 1 hour, Lifeline screening checks for warning signs of stroke and vascular disease. Nearly 50% of people that suffer a stroke never have symptoms. Don't wait until it's too late. Get screened today.
The doctor said I'm one lucky guy, and if I hadn't gone to the screening, I would have been a statistic.
$129, 4 ultrasound tests. No needles, no pain. Just peace of mind.
I owe my life to you.
Mobile testing units are coming to your neighborhood. If you're over 50, make an appointment by calling 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
Lifeline screening saved my life.
Please call now. 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
Homeowners, before you write one more check for your high interest rate debts, stop. If you want to simplify your bills and get cash, call and ask about a combo loan from America's number one home loan lender, Countrywide. It's a refinance that you could use to combine your first mortgage, your second mortgage, your car loan, and all your high-rate credit card debt into one easy loan with one low monthly payment. You get the stability of a low fixed rate, and consolidating at a lower rate could save you hundreds of dollars every month and give you the cash you need. No one can do what Countrywide can. Whatever your financial situation, don't wait for rates to go up. Call right now and ask for a combo loan. 1-800-981-2980. That's 1-800-981-2980. Countrywide Home Loans is an equal housing lender. Restrictions apply, so call and apply now. 1-800-981-2980. 1-800-981-2980.
I'm used to.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The LA City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Everything checks.
Small business, big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big think over the head. Eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more, Graham. Big thinking for small business. Program subject.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area. Stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate. It's a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out of it. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
The best of politically direct on Air America Radio.
Well, that shows you know more about the Lord and his good book than you do about men.
That's my good fortune. I know enough about men to have steered clear of them.
And welcome back. My guest is author and historian William J. Mann. We're talking about his book, Kate, The Woman Who Was Hepburn. And, William, before the break, we were talking about the relationships that were so important in Katharine Hepburn's life. And many of them were, in fact, women. Laura Harding, Phyllis Wilburn, any number of other women. A phrase came to mind during the break, actually, that I wanted to sort of suggest. And it's actually affectional orientation, not sexual. Because many of these relationships, apparently, at least as you, and I have to point out to people who haven't read this book yet, and they will when we're done talking, is that Kate Hepburn was, although you didn't interview her, you talked to a lot of people who knew her well, and your sense of it was that she was not a terribly sexual being.
Right. It was not an important determinant for her relationships, whether or not the relationship was sexual. The relationship with Phyllis Wilburn was perhaps one of the most important of her life and sustained her for the last years of her own life, and yet it was never sexual. It was, as far as I can determine, everyone who knew her well said, no, that relationship was never sexual. But it was, as you say, the affectional part of that relationship was vital to sustaining Kate in her later years.
Well, let's come to the relationship that so many people and in Kate Hepburn's own later years, her efforts to make this the defining relationship of her life were profound and consistent. She really worked to have people believe that Spencer Tracy was the single and great love of her life.
Right.
That's not entirely true.
No. Not, at least not in the way that she wanted us to think it was true.
Can you share, without giving away some of the secrets of this book, I'd like at least people to have an understanding of how, for example, how did they come together? We all know the stories about how they met to make a film, and
I'll
take you down a peg and all
That's
of that.
Right.
But
all of those things.
What's the truth of how they came together as whatever they were?
Well, I think it's interesting to understand Katharine Hepburn. We have to look at the patterns in her life, and all of the men that she fell madly in love with, and there were at least three or four that she...
Howard Hughes was definitely one of them.
Howard Hughes, John Ford, the poet Phelps Putnam, all of them left behind stories of their own sexual conflicts. Spencer Tracy is included in that group. There have been many stories that have been around for years and years, and that I was finally able to kind of track down for the book that show that Spencer was very, very conflicted about his sexuality. He did have relationships with men. They were fleeting. They were often with transitory people that he would bring into the house. He was a very tortured man for many, many reasons. And I think one of those important reasons, one of the reasons that made him so unhappy in his life, was he was conflicted about his own sexuality. You know, if you see the movie Brokeback Mountain, you'll understand that many men of that era lived with an inability to accept a very vital part of themselves, because the images of homosexuality in those days were very limited. They were, you know, effeminate and they were marginal, and somebody like Spencer Tracy, who was a very masculine man, could not imagine himself in this way.
And a devout Catholic.
And he was devout Catholic, exactly. And so he always lived with the sense that he was damned. And so many of the previous biographies of Tracy or studies of Tracy have painted him as this kind of tortured and unhappy man who was making everybody else unhappy around him. And I think if we understand this about him, we can actually see him a little bit more sympathetically. And certainly Kate did. Kate saw him with an incredible amount of sympathy.
Well, what's so fascinating about this book, and again, you know, coming at it from an understanding of the conflicts that people had when they were conflicted about their sexuality in this era, is seeing that Kate was not only attracted to him as a man's man,
right.
You know, his thick neck and his, you know, craggy features and all of that, but
that's right.
There was something about that tortured quality, and you mentioned some of the other people, John Ford, Phelps Putnam, people had the same conflicts, and there must have been part of her that needed that.
Yeah, you know, I think in many ways, Kate went through her life wanting to be her mother and her father. She wanted a relationship that would replicate that. That was the way it was supposed to be in her mind. That was the right way to be. A woman who was strong, but who still deferred to the man. A man who was strong, who was tough and you know, set the rules. And every relationship where she would fall in love with a man, that's what she tried to make it. And she would try to live it that way, but ultimately, you know, she was living an illusion, and she would discover that halfway through. You know, I'm not my mother, and Spencer is certainly not my father. And it's unfortunate that she spent her life chasing after that illusion, as if the way that Dr. and Mrs. Hepburn had lived was the only or the right way to be.
And there was a period where she broke away from Tracy. It wasn't this uninterrupted 27 years,
right,
that she later tries to tell people. She came to a place, and it was, what, in the early 50s? And
yes,
she left him.
She did, and that's actually the period of her life that I admire the most, because she said, I've had it. This is not the relationship that I, you know, was hoping it might become, and I'm going off on my own. And she went off to London, and she starred in Shakespeare, and she did Shaw, and she did Eugene O'Neill, and she was putting her craft as an actress first. You know, it was her own needs she put first instead of, you know, these wounded men that she was trying to fix. And she was living in a community of women. It was Irene Selznick and Constance Collier and Phyllis Wilborn who were her close associates. And it's actually the most admirable part of her career, because she's really living a very authentic life in that period.
Well, you talk about having access to some information that really had never been public before. Who was Scotty?
Scotty was and is a very well-respected bartender, caterer, party giver to the stars, and a very genial man who has many, many stories to tell. It goes back into the 1940s. He's one of those underground figures of Hollywood who holds so many secrets, and the fact that he was willing to share with me his stories of Kate and Spencer Tracy off-screen in private was a great honor.
Well, it is a bit euphemistic to say party giver and caterer. You say very clearly in the book that he was also someone who helped to arrange for these transient relationships that Spencer Tracy had, and then, in fact, Katharine Hepburn had with,
exactly,
some young women.
Yeah. Sure.
And Scotty,
sure,
helped to introduce people in very quietly and discreetly, but there's no other term for that. I think you use the phrase male madam.
Well, he's been called Hollywood's male madam, though, in fact, you know, it wasn't as organized as, say, Heidi Fleiss's Black Book, you know,
right,
you know, 30 years later. But he was a one-man introduction service. He would come and give these parties, and he would bring boys or girls, depending on the party giver's proclivities. And people admired him for it. He's a true Hollywood original.
He was also a participant as well. He at least speaks to his own involvement with Spencer Tracy, which would be, you know, sort of a firsthand description.
Yes, right. It's first-hand description would describe it, yes.
Yeah, and probably a poor choice of words on my part. But let me ask you, why did he agree to cooperate for this? I gather that people must have wanted to talk to him for years, and this was the first time he's ever spoken to anyone. Is that right?
For years. This was a coup. I've been trying to get Scotty to speak for the last decade, and when he finally agreed, you know, I didn't ask questions why. I was just eagerly taking down the notes. So I think what happened was he trusted me. I think I gained his trust. I think he understood that these stories matter and that there's relevance to these stories.
How old is he now?
He's got to be in his 80s, middle 80s. And I think he never told him sensationally. There's no axe to grind. There was no sense of, I want to be paid for my stories. I think he just realized that, this is cultural history. This is important.
Absolutely.
And he lived part of that, and I think he finally came to that understanding.
Is there more that was not included in the book that could surface in something else you do in the future?
Absolutely. Scotty's a book in himself, I tell you.
I think that's right. And
yeah.
It was clear to me in reading this that it was a tremendous coup. So kudos to you for getting the interview.
Thank you.
My guest is William J. Mann. He is the author of Kate, the Woman Who Was Hepburn. This is Politically Direct on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
From the door. Paul came knocking 6-1 down the line. 5 men ran for cover and that meat red moon did shine. Oh, oh. Let's grill and shot glass fill the pines. Barstools grew like witches grew.
Children's Hospital know all too well how life can change in an instant. And with those children, give to the UC Davis Children's Hospital with AM 1320.
If you are a college graduate and you owe at least $15,000 in student loans, here's a toll-free number you should know.
1-866-600-3019.
Or if you borrowed money to put a child through college and are now coping with big monthly payments, call toll-free.
1-866-600-3019.
Talk to a specially trained counselor about a federally backed consolidation loan that could cut your monthly college debt payments by up to 50%. It's easy to qualify right over the phone.
1-866-600-3019.
Find out how to lock in a fixed interest rate that will never go up, regardless of the economy, and get terms that could drive your rate even lower.
1-866-600-3019.
Call toll-free today to learn how a federally backed consolidation loan can work for you.
1-866-600-3019.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive, massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me is that tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Good afternoon, Montana, at AM 1320 KCTC. Taking a look at the weather. Tonight we have lows right around 42. It's going to be pretty gorgeous on through the until Wednesday. Wednesday, though, partly cloudy. 25% chance of showers on Thursday. Heavy showers, 54 for the high end Friday. It looks like we're going to have showers on that day, too. That changed up a little bit. Highs around 57 Saturday. I think back to normal, about 62 degrees. We're sitting at 57. Beat the traffic with News 10, Fair Oaks Boulevard at Howe Avenue. We do have a vehicle that is on fire there. You might want to stay clear of that. It looks like a big old truck is going on eastbound 50 just east of Zinfandel. There is a vehicle on the right-hand side slowing things down. Northbound I-5, a garden on our usual spots. We do have a slowdown there due to a hit and run. No injuries, but emergency vehicles are blocking the lane. Westbound I-80 just west of Madison Avenue, a two-car crash. And Roseville Road at Longview Drive, there's a two-car crash there as well. Montana at AM 1320 KCTC.
Each of us who have spoken
given to you tonight has represented a different field of endeavor in American life. I want to speak about the attack on culture, not because I work in the field of culture. I speak because I am an American, and as an American, I shall always resist any attempt at the abridgment of freedom.
And we are back. My guest is William J. Mann, author of Kate, the Woman Who Was Hepburn. Well, the clip we just came back in with was Katharine Hepburn, unmistakably, speaking at the Hollywood Bowl at a political rally. And if you can picture in your mind's eye, she was dressed in bright red and articulating artistic freedom and freedom from government regulation at a time when you could actually be investigated for some of the things she said. William, this is an important part of Kate Hepburn's career. This happened on more than one occasion where her politics and her opinions actually affected her ability to get film roles.
Absolutely. And we have kind of forgotten this. The culture remembers Katharine Hepburn as being fairly liberal, but they don't realize exactly how radical, in fact, she was in the 1940s and the 1950s.
And she made the speech. Tell people about this moment. She was there. She was talking about Henry Wallace, standing up for him, who would run as an independent candidate for president, but was considered widely to be a communist sympathizer at the time when the House Un-American Activities Committee was beginning to investigate people for those associations.
That's right. And, you know, she went there ostensibly to support Henry Wallace, but the speech went much farther than that, in which she compared President Truman's policies to the thought police of Imperial Japan, and she went on about Paul Robeson's blacklisting and how this was un-American, and she really pushed a lot of buttons in that speech.
She was a Dixie chick ahead of her time, wasn't she?
Absolutely. And that's the real Katharine Hepburn. That was a burst of Jimmy coming out, and I think when she realized the hullabaloo that it caused, she backed down eventually because ultimately what was more important to her was the fame. But the real Katharine Hepburn was a fighting radical, and we've forgotten that, I think.
But she never, you say she backed down, but she never apologized for
it. No, she never apologized. But in later years, she tried to, why did I wear that pink dress? You know, I should have, try to make it seem as if it was just kind of a
naivete.
Yeah, an inconsequential decision when, you know, she never wore a dress. She always wore pants, so the fact that she was wearing a dress was significant.
She knew exactly what she was doing.
Well, yes.
As you detail in the book, she then, as the pressure was on, as the studio executives were furious at what she had done, she later on made a career choice in actually deciding to take the role in The African Queen, based in no small part on a desire to change how people saw her in public.
Absolutely. It's not a coincidence that it was John Huston, who was the director of African Queen, Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn, the two stars, had all been painted red by the communist witch hunters.
Bogart had gone to Washington to speak up for the Hollywood Ten, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And this was their attempt to come back and reposition themselves with the public. And they did it brilliantly, because here's Katharine Hepburn sailing down this muddy river to blow up a German submarine, you know, for the glory of flag and country. And, you know, she becomes this patriot in that film. And from that point on, Katharine Hepburn is an American heroine. She's untouchable after that film. And when she came very, very close in 1947 and 1948 to being subpoenaed to testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee.
You refer to a rumor in the book that it was Richard Nixon who, he was a member of that committee, talked the committee out of subpoenaing her. But I can't imagine why he would. He would have loved that publicity.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a silly rumor. It never happened.
Yeah. And that's, I have to say, again, one of the things I love about this book, and again, the book is Kate, the Woman Who Was Hepburn. Go to Amazon right now. You're clicking on, you're buying this book. The great thing that you do is you take a lot of these rumors, so many things that grew up around the myth and legend of Katharine Hepburn, from the relationship with Spencer Tracy, Howard Hughes, so many of these things about which we have come to accept things which, as it turns out, simply didn't happen. And what you do, and you don't do it in a mean way, you don't do it in a way that makes, as someone who loves Katharine Hepburn, I came out of reading this book loving her as much, if not more,
exactly,
for the human being that she was,
right,
not the
exactly
myth she wanted us to think she was.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a tough road for you to walk, I should think, because you must have continuously come up against these things which were falsehoods.
Right. When the real woman is in fact far more fascinating than the legend. But, you know, we've gotten to a point now, and rightly so, where we're demanding, you know, absolute authenticity and accuracy from memoirists, people who are writing their memoirs. I think we need to demand the same of our biographers to say, you know, if you're going to include a story in a book about a person's life, well, we need that to be based on primary sources, not just some story that's been floating around for years or something that was originally written by a Hollywood press agent and put, you know, published in the Saturday Evening Post. I mean, we have to go back and re-question everything. We have to reconsider everything that's ever been written about these. Because people who live in the public life are, as we said earlier, are creating their own realities and their own images. And we need to, as biographers, we need to consider that every scrap of evidence to find out exactly where it all came from.
Well, as we know all too well here at Air America, the Bush administration has made non-reality-based thinking all the fashion for the last
yes,
6 years.
Exactly.
And as I like to point out, truth is not a matter of opinion. Facts are immutable if you can find them, and that's something
right.
that, you know, again, all of us who love history and love film need to be grateful for about the work you're doing. I have to ask you, you talked about primary sources. Apparently, Katharine Hepburn's own papers are possibly going to be available. They weren't available to you for this book, but there's the potential that they will open up. Now, you didn't wait, and clearly you did so much work to be able to source and the book is brilliantly sourced. But aren't you curious? Aren't you tempted to go in once those papers are opened up to see what else there is?
Oh, absolutely. I'll be first in line.
Well, when? Is it like, you know, the Warren Commission, the sealed documents of 75 years? Or are we talking about, how long are we talking about?
Well, we don't know. Can't quite seem to get a straight answer from anyone. And I was originally told they were going to be available in time for this book, and then I think when the certain people found out that this book was going to be as exhaustive as an intensive as it was, suddenly we found out that the papers aren't available for a while.
Who is the controlling interest? Who controls the papers?
It's still the estate of Katharine Hepburn that's controlling the timetable.
Is that Cynthia McFadden?
She's the executor, yes.
Uh-huh. Has she commented on this book at all?
No, she hasn't, but she's wrote me a couple of very friendly letters when I was working on the book, and I admire Cynthia's friendship with Katharine Hepburn.
Explain to people that late in her life, Cynthia McFadden became something of a protege. Cynthia McFadden now at Court TV and
that's right.
and a journalist of great repute and talent, was a protege of Katharine Hepburn's.
That's right, and in her later life, Kate was very lonely. She had outlived so many of her friends, and if it wasn't for Cynthia McFadden, who many of Kate's friends called the light at the end of Kate's life, you know, Kate would have been even lonelier, because Cynthia was a young woman who I think reminded Kate of herself at that age, and she made sure that Kate was taken care of at the end and that she was always surrounded by good care and with friends. So she actually was the light at the end of Kate's life.
Well, I hope that she will shine some light on those papers so that you can share them with us. I wanted to ask you what your next project was, and it seems to me that I know the answer. The next project will be updating this book with with the papers of Katharine Hepburn.
As soon as they're available, I'll be updating the book.
Well, William Mann, thank you again for joining us. The book is Kate, The Woman Who Was Hepburn. It is a remarkable work. It is well worth the reading. And again, my hope is that I'm going to get to read the next copy. Well, perhaps in time for, it's a year usually between hardcover and paperback. Maybe that'll just be enough time.
It could be. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, we'll look forward to it. Thank you for joining us, and come back and talk to us again on Politically Direct.
I shall. Thank you.
Listen to me, mister. You're my knight in shining armor. Don't you forget it. You're going to get back up that horse, and I'm going to be right behind you, holding on tight, and away we're going to go, go, go.
I don't like horses.
Homeowners, before you write one more check for your high interest rate debts, stop. If you want to simplify your bills and get cash, call and ask about a combo loan from America's number one home loan lender, Countrywide. It's a refinance that you could use to combine your first mortgage, your second mortgage, your car loan, and all your high-rate credit card debt into one easy loan with one low monthly payment. You get the stability of a low fixed rate, and consolidating at a lower rate could save you hundreds of dollars every month and give you the cash you need. No one can do what Countrywide can. Whatever your financial situation, don't wait for rates to go up. Call right now and ask for a combo loan. 1-800-981-2980. That's 1-800-981-2980. Countrywide Home Loans is an equal housing lender. Restrictions apply, so call and apply now. 1-800-981-2980. 1-800-981-2980.
You don't get to do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready? New rule number one. Enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Peter King. It's being billed as a sign of success. British Prime Minister Tony Blair is expected to announce the first British troop withdrawals from Iraq when he addresses Parliament tomorrow. Sky News reporter Ursula Arrington.
The withdrawal of British troops from southern Iraq has always been part of the plan. The Prime Minister is expected to announce to the House of Commons that with the success of Operation Sinbad and with Iraqi forces now strong enough to maintain control, the time is right to start bringing British troops home.
The White House says the move was expected and is welcome. A big win for big tobacco. Here's CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein.
The Supreme Court tossed out a $79.5 million award to the widow of an Oregon smoker. Industry critic Stanton Glantz says Philip Morris is getting away with murder.
It's basically effective immunity for the tobacco companies for their behavior.
And legal analyst Andrew Cohen says the ruling may apply to other big businesses that cause harm to consumers.
Corporate defendants in other cases now will be able to point to this ruling when they try to cut or limit punitive damage awards, so this is no small matter.
The Supreme Court ruled Philip Morris should not have been punished for harm done to all smokers. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
A week after the start of the JetBlue meltdown, the carrier's still not quite back up to speed, but its chairman promises to make it up to stranded passengers present and future. CBS News correspondent Sharon Alfonsi has more.
The airline meltdown and passenger misery could set off change across the industry. Today, JetBlue introduced its customer bill of rights. Under it, passengers will be compensated with cash. The longer they wait, the more money they get. If a flight is canceled within 12 hours of departure, they get a full refund. And if a plane is delayed on the ground for 5 hours, passengers can get off.
Drug maker Merck has come under fire for lobbying efforts to make its new cervical cancer vaccine required for adolescent girls to enroll in school. Now the company says it's backing off, suspending a campaign. Spokeswoman Mary Elizabeth Blake.
Gardasil has been so widely embraced, and we don't want any misperception about Merck's role to distract from the ultimate goal, which is fighting cervical cancer. So Merck has reevaluated our approach at the state level and have decided to not lobby for school requirements for Gardasil.
Part of the controversy, the drug protects against a sexually transmitted disease that causes cervical cancer. Some critics thought that might lead to promiscuity among teens. The start of baseball spring training means breaking the silence for Barry Bonds. Sort of. Giants outfielder picked up where he left off last year as reporters asked about his alleged steroid use and reputed involvement in the Balco steroid scandal.
I don't have to say anything to anybody.
Do you have any reaction to the person who admitted leaking the grand jury testimony?
No, I have no comments on that at all.
Okay, Federer, your friend Greg is going on second month in prison. I mean, what are your thoughts on it?
No comments on that either.
This is CBS News.
Tiger Balm presents football superstar Jerry Rice.
Foxtrot. I can't believe I'm dancing with Jerry Rice.
I can't believe dancing is as hard as playing wide receiver.
Tango.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah. How do you manage all the aches and pain?
Tiger Balm.
Really?
Tiger Balm works fast and lasts a long time.
Samba.
Whoa. Oh, sorry. I'm so
such a klutz.
Maybe we should stop.
Nope, just get me some Tiger Balm.
You sure?
Get me the Tiger Balm.
If you suffer from aches and pains, go for the balm. Tiger Balm. Now in a convenient, easy-to-apply patch. At drugstores, mass discount stores, supermarkets, and health food stores everywhere.
What's the worst thing about buying a used car? Could it be the uncertainty of not knowing what you're really getting? Bingo. Now, I have an answer. Honda Certified Used Cars. They're well-maintained, late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with a 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty from the original in-service date and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. Did the comfort level just go up in here? Hey, it may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
First came the tainted peanut butter. Now comes the first lawsuit. Here's KIRO reporter Rachel Bell.
A Seattle lawyer filed the suit today after being contacted by thousands who ate the Peter Pan or Great Value peanut butter.
It's nationwide in scope. They're reporting cases in nearly 40 states. We'll be testing 1,200 jars of peanut butter to help narrow the time frame when the contamination occurred.
Attorney Bill Marler says nearly all the sicknesses sound like salmonella. Marler has handled thousands of foodborne illnesses this lawsuit since the Jack in the Box suit in the 90s and says this is one of the biggest outbreaks he's seen. Rachel Bell for CBS News, Seattle.
45 years to the day that he became the first American to orbit the Earth, John Glenn says the U.S. isn't getting its money's worth out of the International Space Station. Glenn says he supports the president's goal of sending astronauts back to the moon and on to Mars, but not if it means diverting cash from the space station, which is only two-thirds complete. I'm Peter King, CBS News.
New rule, stop whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the 3 blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's time for EcoTalk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello and welcome to the 200th edition of Eco Talk on Air America Radio. We are the nation's only national daily program dedicated exclusively to our precious and embattled environment. We hope to continue bringing you sound solutions for a healthier planet and people well into the future. The new owners are taking over at the Air America Radio Network, the Green Brothers. We are certainly hoping that they will live up to their name and keep us on. We are on the Progressive Network, but we do think environmentalism is for all of us, at least all of us who eat, breathe, or drink, as we say. Well, today's program is a special President's Week edition. I know you're going to enjoy it. In our first half, we'll chat with someone I've wanted to have on the program for quite some time. He's the NRDC's Vehicles Policy Director, Roland Wong. He has all kinds of interesting new information, including why mileage matters so much to America and why we're at a turning point and what we must do. In our second half, we'll be speaking with Anne Bancroft, not the late actress, but the activist and adventurer. She's going to be setting sail, or should we say skiing and swimming, across the Arctic Sea, all to make history, but also to illuminate what's our future, what our future is going to be if we don't stop our emissions burning and burning of fossil fuels, and we don't curb our emissions is what I'm trying to say there. So stay tuned for that. Then we'll have an overview of a conference that took place in San Francisco over the weekend, and of course the top topic was climate change, as you might imagine. Without further ado, want to welcome Roland Wong with the NRDC, and it's appropriate that we're doing this on our 200th edition of EcoTalk because the Natural Resources Defense Council played a pivotal role in our program's evolution at a point along the way. So thanks for joining us, Roland Wong, especially on a holiday.
Oh, thank you, Betsy. I'm very glad to be on your show again.
I know your kids are out of school this week for Ski Week, which is very popular in Northern California. So we've been seeing more and more that European countries are coming to the U.S. To talk environmental policy, and sometimes they just fly over Washington, D.C. and come directly to the golden, or maybe we should change that to the green state. Tell us what they're looking for. Probably not much more gold here, but maybe it's a green rush.
Yeah, well, that's I think you put it very well, Betsy. When it comes to the issue of environmentalism, particularly the issue of global warming, it does appear that California and Europe are moving forward together into the future while Washington seems to be stuck in the past. When you look at the policies that Europeans are putting in place to tackle global warming, you look at the policies that California is putting into place, they're very, very similar policies, so we're moving in a very similar direction. Europe has standards on tailpipes for automobile companies to reduce their global warming pollution. They're moving to, they had a voluntary, they're moving to a mandatory standard like California's program. Europe also has a program where stationary sources like power plants and refineries, or their emissions for global warming pollution, are capped. California adopted a bill last year, which will do that in a few years' time. We'll have a similar system. And finally, there's something very interesting, kind of an innovative new policy where the oil companies are making record profits, are going to be asked, actually going to be required, to start producing and selling low-carbon fuels, decarbonizing, depolluting the fuel supply that we use. And that's something which has been a particularly tough nut to crack. And again, Europe and California are moving forward on this policy in parallel, almost simultaneously.
And, of course, Governor Schwarzenegger made global warming history when he signed into law last month the first big step, of course, to implement the landmark Global Warming Solutions Act of last fall, AB 32. I think that's the one you're referring to. Are other states following in California's lead just in terms of what the states are doing to address these issues?
Yeah, I mean, yes, other states are very eager to follow in California's footsteps. We saw that first with the AB 1493, the Pavley Law for Clean Cars, passed in California in 2002, and now we have about one-third of the nation, a total of 10 other states, have adopted California's Clean Car Law.
Is that including New York?
That is including New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was New York was one of the first, most important states to follow in California's footsteps. California and New York are two of the biggest automobile markets in this country.
And I imagine a lot of East Coast states said, well, if New York can do it, we can do it. Now, you know, California may be way ahead, but, gee, you know, New York's not known for its clean air and clean environment, but they're taking it on. They're, you know, very popular, certainly New York City, very populated area. Of course, I guess they probably drive less than Manhattan, certainly. Not everybody has a car like we out here in California have an average of two cars. But that's beside the point. The point is there's progressive leadership underway, and it's taking hold.
That's exactly right, and many people are looking towards California. And on this new fuel requirement, this new requirement on the oil companies themselves, California, the governor announced at the beginning of this year something called the low-carbon fuel standard. That is actually showing up. Again, we talked about how in Europe they're moving forward something almost identical, moving forward simultaneously. British Columbia just announced the global warming plan. That also includes a low-carbon fuel standard, and there's also some interest among some presidential contenders for 08. Most notably, the governor of Iowa has announced as a part of his global warming platform, he's including, again, the California low-carbon fuel standard approach.
You're talking about Tom Vilsack?
That's correct.
Yeah, it's certainly become a national issue that cannot be ignored in 2008. I guess that's what's really changed so much since the last national election.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the speed at which the changes has occurred in Washington really has kind of taken some of us by surprise, very pleasantly, of course, the new leadership in Congress really making this a very, very big issue. There is real potential in Washington for the first time for something meaningful to be passed on global warming pollution. And what California does setting a model for the nation, like it always has in terms of energy efficiency, whether it's appliances or pollution control, like three-way catalytic converters on vehicles. California has always pioneered things for the last 3 or 4 decades and shown the nation how you can use less energy, have less pollution, and have a healthier, more vibrant economy. And that's what we're doing now, and that's why Congress will be looking to us more and more as a model for the rest of the nation.
I think it's overly idealistic to think that perhaps in the 2008 presidential campaigns, global warming and our environmental threats could be what the economy's been in past presidential elections.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at what's happening in Washington right now, the debate in Congress, of course, the war in Iraq is a very critical issue. But global warming has taken on a very prominent role, and what we're seeing is a very clear distinction among the parties on that issue. So I do think that it will be a very important issue as we lead up to the 08 elections.
Okay, so do you think we'll look back and see Arnold Schwarzenegger's tenure really as one of the major turning points? I mean, he really is not someone that anyone predicted would turn out to be a big steward, certainly on climate change, and we don't even have to say why. That's an unlikely U-turn.
Well, the governor's leadership on this issue of global warming has been very, very critical, and on the issue of global warming, it's really hard to say what he could do more. He's doing a lot, so much here on this issue. And we're very pleased with all of his leadership on this. And because leadership is so critical on this issue, because California is so critical in terms of leadership for the rest of the nation, absolutely the governor's role, we would hope 10 years' time from now, we would look back and see the governor's role on AB 32, on the low carbon fuel standard, and all these other important implementations here in California to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. I think absolutely we can look back and see this as a very kind of pivotal time and his leadership being very, very critical.
And stepping outside of California for the next part of our interview in the second segment, we'll look at many things, including what on the horizon in terms of clean car technology is exciting you. But before we go to break, what do you think of Barack Obama's coal-to-liquid energy plan?
Well, let's just put it this way, is that we're not running out of oil. We are running out of cheap oil.
Okay.
And the new sources of oil or something that looks like oil are becoming more and more polluting. And that includes people in Washington talk quite a bit about deriving a fuel from coal, turning coal into a liquid fuel. The problem with that is it's very polluting for greenhouse gases. It could be twice on a per-gallon basis, emit twice as much greenhouse gas pollution as today's gasoline. There is a way, of course, we can move forward on energy security and move forward on solving global warming, but we have to choose the right kinds of fuels, biofuels made from the right kind of sources, electricity from renewable sources. There's sources that we can use, and we have to use if we're going to solve simultaneously our energy security and global warming problems. Coal-derived liquids really does not fit into that equation.
Okay, Roland, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you your opinion of ethanol and also electric cars. Are they making a comeback? What can we hope for? What can we work for? What can we vote for? You're listening to EcoTalk on the Air America Radio Network in conversation with Roland Wong of the NRDC's Vehicle Policy Department.
Have you ever heard of a child, maybe on the news, that was in a terrible accident and thought to yourself, that could just as easily have been my child? Help the children at the UC Davis Children's Hospital with AM 1320. Call 888-780-8811.
I must tell you, Veronique, this is one of the best wines I've ever tasted. It's smooth and colorful.
Merci. It's a Chateau Bousquet, and it's very potent. But it doesn't give me a headache, which is one of the reasons I started importing organic wines 25 years ago.
Sounds expensive.
Mais pourquoi?
I heard that organic wines cost 3 times as much as regular wines.
Since when do you believe everything you hear? In fact, they're very affordable.
Veronique, you're sure about that?
Darling, it's my company. Yes, I am sure.
So you think there are real benefits to drinking organic, huh?
You eat organic already, so it's time to drink organic. Check out our site, theorganicwinecompany.com.
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
History of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and a perfect time to reflect on the current state of affairs. Is there no one who can rise to tell the American people the truth about our ass-kicking success? Oh, God, it's the Dark Prince himself! Sent forth from his lair to face the nation! Oh, evil one. He is here to do it.
I remember when you were saying we'd be greeted as liberators. You played down the insurgency 10 months ago. You said it was in its last throw.
Stay calm, Dickie. Don't shoot him in the face. No! Stay calm.
And we are writing our future right now as we look at alternative technology and vehicle transportation, also alternative fuels. One of the leading experts in the nation, if not the world, is Roland Wong. He's with our partner, Natural Resources Defense Council. He is the Vehicle Policy Director there. I've known Roland for about the last 5 years since a group of moms launched the Grassroots Campaign, Don't Be Fuel. We still have that virtual campaign, Roland, you'll be happy to know. And people are finally listening. Boy, was that about 5 years ahead of its time, but that's okay. A lot of environmental trends are, and people are listening. That's what counts. Just before we get into what I mentioned we're going to talk about this segment, are you encouraged by this finally a vast awakening in terms of people really tuning into their environment and specifically concerned about climate change?
Yeah, I'm actually very, very optimistic between what's happening with the public consciousness on this issue of global warming, how fast things are moving forward here in California, in Europe, and how things are really changing. The tone is really changing in Washington, D.C. So I am very, very hopeful about our situation. I think we're at a turning point in this battle against global warming.
What about ethanol? I've read all sides of that debate. What do you think?
Yeah, good question. Very, very confusing debate. The bottom lines are that not all ethanol is created equal. And if you want to help the environment, you also have to use the ethanol in the right way. Here's what I mean. Ethanol is an alcohol. It can be made from a variety of different sources. Right now, in this country, it's made from corn. But in the future, it can be made from other materials, particularly waste materials from plants, from agriculture, or even from waste paper. It can be made from, you can also make it from specially grown crops, like with switchgrasses, like a prairie grass. All of those materials are much superior and can be, if done properly, can be sourced sustainably. And we can have an ethanol that gets tremendous amounts of greenhouse gas reductions and is much more sustainable when it comes to production of that feedstock, say, versus today's corn. Today's corn is not the answer. It could be a stepping stone to a better future, but we have to have the right policies in place to get us to better production and feedstocks for ethanol.
Now, about 5 years ago, we were all talking about how we need the American automakers to really get on the hybrid bandwagon and start making more cleaner cars, or they're going to be left behind in the dust. That proved to be correct. I don't know how it is that we saw that coming, and the big automakers whose specialty and lives depend on them making predictions missed it. But we really have seen a real U-turn there as well. And we also saw the death of the electric car. Do you think we'll see it be reborn?
Yeah, that's a very interesting story with the electric vehicle, because the electric vehicle is, and from our perspective, we do see this great resurgence in interest in electric vehicle in the form of plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. It's very interesting. Battery technology has advanced. The primary difference here is that battery technology has advanced quite a bit since the last time we experimented with electric vehicles about 10 years ago, particularly in this state. The other thing which has changed is that we have lots of these electric drive vehicles on the road, particularly the Toyota Prius, the Ford Escape, with relatively minor modifications. With these new battery technologies, you can turn these into so-called plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, where you can plug that hybrid vehicle into the grid to charge up the battery. And when the battery gets run down, you can either plug it back in, or you can have a gasoline engine charge the battery. So the new plug-in hybrid vehicle is the future of the electric vehicle.
And Felix Kramer has been on the show a few times. He is, of course, one of the pioneers in that movement. Now, Ed Begley Jr. is coming out with a new electric car that seats five, supposedly, the Phoenix. Have you seen or heard anything about that?
No, I have not. And I know there's also a company up here based in San Ramon called Tesla. Probably many people are aware they're selling a $100,000 two-seater Ferrari-like electric roadster.
We had that, up here in San Francisco. The founder of the car, I guess, or the CEO of that company, was up touting that. But that's, of course, not a solution for everyone.
And they are, of course, working on a four- or five-passenger vehicle. I think they call it the White Star. But they are working on a version which will seat four or five people. But the key here is that the battery technology is much different than it was. It's driven by advances in hybrid commercialization, but also, of course, consumer electronics. We have much better batteries, and that gives us much greater hope that this time around, battery electric vehicles, whether it's in the form of a pure battery electric or whether it's in form of this plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, that there is a great future for those technologies.
Do you think we ought to still be pressuring automakers to make a lot more hybrid models? It still seems like it's a token amount compared to the conventional motored vehicles they're offering.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Even the best of the companies aren't making enough hybrid electric vehicles really to do what's necessary to solve global warming. Yes, we have to pressure them all into building more hybrid electric vehicles, but in general, more fuel-efficient vehicles of all kinds of different technologies.
We just have about a minute left. I want to get your quick opinion on biodiesel. How big a role do you think that alternative fuel will play in the next few years?
The biodiesel is a very interesting tech. I have to figure out how to make it through different processes rather than the current soy and sunflower and waste oil. Not enough resources there.
Really? Not enough waste in America?
Shocking, I know.
Thanks so much, Roland Wong, with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He is our Vehicles Policy Director, very knowledgeable about all things automotive and alternative fuels as well. We thank him, and we'll be back right after the news break with more, including an Arctic explorer who's about to make history. UC Davis Children's Hospital know all too well how life can change in an instant. And with those children, give to the UC Davis Children's Hospital with AM 1320.
Are you the heir of an inheritance held in probate or trust and need cash now? EstateFinance.com can help. We provide inheritance cash advances from $5,000 to $500,000 in as little as 2 to 5 business days. Your cash advance is based on the value of the estate or trust and the dollar amount you stand to inherit. To pre-qualify, you must be inheriting at least $17,000. You receive the cash you need fast, and EstateFinance.com does the waiting until the probate estate or trust is distributed. Because we're repaid directly from the estate or trust, you make no monthly payments, and your credit and personal income histories are rarely a problem. We're fast, professional, courteous, and guarantee the lowest rates in the inheritance finance business. Stop worrying and waiting and call us now. There's no cost or obligation to apply. Call 866-559-FUND. That's 866-559-FUND. We also offer generous referral fees, and our funding attorneys are standing by. www.estatefinance.com.
What is the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC? It's many things. NRDC is a powerful and effective environmental action group. NRDC is spearheading new solutions to break America's destructive addiction to foreign oil. NRDC is 1.2 million members and online activists speaking out against the Bush administration's assault on our last wild places. NRDC is the power of your voice. I'm Robert Redford. From removing lead and gasoline to protecting the last unspoiled gray whale nursery, NRDC has overcome insurmountable odds again and again. But never has their work been more urgent than today. From the unrelenting attacks on our last wild places to the devastation brought on by America's growing addiction to oil, we need NRDC now more than ever. So what is NRDC? It is our best hope of preserving the land we love.
Hey, Sarah.
New rule number one, no more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your ass. All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking. As in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpot start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Cloudy and hazy, kids play whenever I'm with
expedition we're going to tell you about from someone who is leading it is anything but a walk in the park. Well, it's about as tough an expedition as you could conduct, but it's for good reason. For more than 20 years, world-renowned polar explorers and educators Anne Bancroft and Leif Arneson have made history and inspired millions by skiing and ski sailing over ice in the extreme cold of the Arctic and Antarctic regions. But in just a couple weeks, they'll begin a new expedition across the Arctic Ocean. Their primary goal is not to make history, but to change the future for all of us. We welcome, very proudly, we're honored to have Anne Bancroft on EcoTalk. We had Will Steger on a while ago. He's also doing an Arctic expedition with dog sleds. You're using some different equipment, but basically the same goal, to try to illuminate and educate what is happening not only up there in the Arctic, but what is in store for all of us if we don't take heed.
Yeah, we're collaborating on a few things as we both embark at about the same time and different parts of the Arctic, and it's really exciting because we're doing similar but different things on our two expeditions. And Will's going to be talking with a lot of the Inuit culture, and we'll be a little bit further north where there will be no people, but we'll be interacting through the Internet, believe it or not, with all this amazing technology.
That is amazing, and we're so glad that we can track your progress. Where are you going from what point to what point, and how long do you expect it will take you, and what is your primary mode of transportation?
Well, it's about a 75, 80-day expedition, and we're leaving from the very top of Canada, a place called Ward Hunt. In fact, Will and I left there 21 years ago in 1986, embarking on a dog sledding expedition way back when, so he kind of gave me my start. And so I'll be able to sort of anecdotally see if the ice has changed a little bit. But we'll start pulling and pushing our sleds from that point, and we'll even at times put on a dry suit, a special dry suit that we've had made that will go over all of our clothes so that we can swim across the open expanses of water called leads. And we should be done sometime at the end of May. We're never quite sure when our ending point is.
Now, what's the significance of your swimming it? Was that something that was possible a couple of decades back?
You know, it wasn't really needed two decades ago or even a decade ago. The ice has increased in its in its thinness. It's gotten much more, well, I just say it's crummy ice.
Mm.
And so you're finding, when you're up there, a lot more open water than you've ever seen before. So the suits are allowing, it's a new strategy to try and allow for us to keep on moving and working our way towards the pole.
Now, I know you said you're not, it's not about breaking any records, but you will be creating history, of course, because you're the first female team, I think, to do it without resupply. But, again, that's not the point, but we just want to applaud you for taking that on. You and your partner in this exploration are not 20s or 30s or even 40s. You're in your early 50s, if I might say that. That is publicized here in the release, so
yeah.
Don't think I'm exposing any secrets here. Well, I'm around that age, and I don't think I'd be up for this kind of thing. What kind of training do you need, and how cold is that water? And I don't even think the sun is up much this time of year up there, is it?
Well, no, we're just starting the expedition just as the sun sort of works its way around the curve of the Earth. So we'll have, approximately 20 minutes of sunlight. And then
the
rest of the day is sort of this gray light. And then, of course, the nights are pitch black. But I always love to say that we ski into spring as we head north. The sunlight dramatically increases. Which is fabulous both from a physical standpoint to a psychological standpoint. And I think, you know, to go back to your statement about, this making the history piece, I mean, one of the things that we're so excited about on this journey after so many years of doing these kinds of what we would call extreme expeditions in order to teach, because both of us are former educators, is that, you know, we're really not doing it anymore for the first. Those gave us great platforms in the past to speak from, but now it's really the message about what is happening around the globe with global warming, and that is where is really why we're attempting this feat.
And let's focus on that. How will you document that? Progress or the opposite of that, as you see melting ice caps, and translate that to classrooms around the country and perhaps the world?
Well, we're logged into classrooms and scouting groups and all sorts of groups around the globe through our website and different partnerships. None of this would really be possible without incredible partners. And start to be conscious of the way in which their lives tend to affect the carbon footprint of, you know, of our lives. And, you know, it's very simple things. I think the thing that Lieve and I have to offer in doing this expedition is to try and take the audience that's been following us over the years on these expeditions from one globe, one end of the globe to the other, and try and engage them into an awareness and an empowerment that with the collective power that we hold as people, we can do anything. We can change things. Because, you know, we talk about this as a crisis, but at the same time, you know, explorers like Lieve and myself are really hopeful people. So we don't look at it as such a heavy burden as I think it's oftentimes being portrayed. When I lecture to groups around the United States, they're really disempowered. They don't know how to engage into this discussion because it all sounds so beyond them. And our job, in part, is to open up the discussion and then to really help guide those actions and educate individuals to those actions where they can be a part of the solution.
Obviously, you're an optimist if you're going to get through 75 days bringing with you everything you're going to need. That's pretty amazing in and of itself. But to keep with our focus on the message here, in addition to a critical message about global warming and it beginning in the Arctic first, you're also motivating young girls and women to really stretch their, what they thought were their boundaries.
Well, I hope so. You know, I've had such a wonderful ride in the last 20 years of being a woman in this arena. And, you know, and as an educator, it's been a marvelous opportunity to try and talk to particularly young women. But we have a huge audience of women in my age bracket saying, wow, you're chasing this dream, you're going after your passion, I can probably dust off some that I've been storing up. You know, it's not too late as I watch you. And that is such a privilege to have those kinds of interactions with people whom you haven't really met in person. And you know, I hope if it breaks down barriers for others, I'm exceedingly happy.
Wow, very inspiring. And speaking of following in your footsteps, you won't have anyone tracking you or a shadow team. What happens if you get into trouble?
Well, we always have, you know, a lot of different backup scenarios. We feel like we're the two oldest, safest individuals around. It's probably one of the reasons we have had such a long ride in doing all of these expeditions.
Are either of you mothers, by the way?
Lieve is a mother of three grown girls.
Mm.
She's actually a grandmother.
What an inspiration. Grandma's going across the Arctic Sea on skis and swimming. I love it. So how do you feel, you know, taking this on? You've done other expeditions like this, but this one obviously coming at a very critical time in our, not only our nation, but the planet's eco-awareness.
In a certain way, we really didn't plan to do this trip, but we were so compelled by the situation a couple years ago as we started to plan this. And we knew that we had this huge audience that's been following us, these 8 to 10 million kids all over the globe and with our curriculums. And we thought it felt at the time irresponsible not to engage into it. And so it for me, it's really the pinnacle of my career to be able to take a cause I'm passionate about, to take a young, hopeful, passionate audience and bring them with me.
And with global warming, what's the average temperature going to be for you? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, we'll start off at 75 below probably. And you know, as that sun gets a little bit higher in the sky, it starts to warm up. And somebody asked me years ago, is there a difference between 75 and 50 below zero? And I can tell you now that the answer is absolutely yes.
and what gets
you? It starts to feel balmy.
And what gets you to jump in that frigid waters? I must take a little push.
It, you know, when we first started learning how to do it and training and testing out our theory about getting into these suits, it was an amazing experience to force yourself in. You know, 20 years ago with Will, I actually fell in the ocean, and it was just an accident with no suit. And I know how vulnerable you are in this remoteness, in this kind of temperature, and then of course you're, you know, it's so life threatening to be wet in this environment. So the suit is the most amazing experience, to be in that chunky ice water and look around at this landscape, which is just, I know we have lots of images of it, because it's just, it's hard to articulate how amazing it is.
We hope we can see the pictures.
To be a part of that.
Well, we applaud you. There are no words, really, to just say hats off to you, your strength, your conviction. Best of luck. We hope to be checking in with you from the expedition. And Bancroft is going on a historic journey. It's a call to action. It is called Explore Arctic Warming 2007. We'll be back right after these messages.
Have you heard of a child that was in a terrible accident or that was fighting in a life-threatening illness and thought to yourself, that could be my child? Give to the UC Davis Children's Hospital with AM 1320, 888.
Why are drivers making the switch from AAA to Better World Club? Better World Club is not a part of the highway lobby and offers comparable services as AAA at the same price or less.
Just recently, I had to call Better World Club because I had a flat tire. The tire was changed right away, and not only that, they drove me to the gas station to fill my tire with air. I would definitely recommend Better World Club to make the switch. It's worth it just for their newsletter, Kicking Asphalt.
And Better World Club donates 1% of annual revenues to environmental cleanup and advocacy. Compare for yourself at betterworldclub.com.
Hi, Betsy Rosenberg here to tell you about a great coffee company and give you a green gift idea. It's the Organic Coffee Company, a family-run business that has truly delicious coffee and allows you to support the environment with every pound you buy. They import beans from two farms in Panama that they've restored to their natural rainforest state, as well as using organic composting methods. So do yourself and the Earth a favor and support Organic Coffee Company. Once you try their delicious coffee, you'll be hooked too. Order at organiccoffeecompany.com and use the promotion code EARTH to get 10% off.
New rule. Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
American Association for the Advancement of Science is meeting here in San Francisco this week to talk about everything scientific in 2007, from anthropology and astronomy to zygotes and zoology. We'll find out if there is any debate about global warming among scientists. Dr. Vaughn Tarikian, welcome to San Francisco. A little nicer weather here than you've been having lately on the East Coast.
That's absolutely true, Betsy. Thank you so much. It's actually nice to be in a place where you can walk out without your jacket on.
Now, we don't want to get too warm. It's supposed to be around 70 degrees, which is a little warm for February, even here. So that's really what we were talking about, right, is the wacky weather, not just a warming, but, you know, some of the severe cold weather and snow and the droughts and, you know, just the extremes that climate change will bring, and we're already probably seeing the beginning of. So you're going to be talking about a lot of scientific issues, but as you mentioned before we started the show, this is the mother of all environmental challenges.
It is. Ultimately, climate is the umbrella in which all other environmental and actually most social activities take place. And so as you begin to change the climate, you invariably are going to change all those other pieces as well.
Now, we talk about climate change a lot on this program, so we don't need too much of an education, but I want to hear about what kind of people will be attending this conference, educators and scientists, I imagine?
Yeah, it's going to be a very broad range of international scientists and educators with, as you mentioned at the start of your show, with a range of expertise. But what brings them all together is this real belief that there's an importance of understanding science and pursuing scientific inquiry in helping society. And so when we talk today about what we're going to be looking at, we're always very interested in things like science and technology for sustainable well-being, which in fact is the theme for this year's annual meeting.
Now, before we go into specific issues, including climate change, what about the climate of not believing scientists? Just wonder what some of your reactions have been as this has unfolded, this kind of Twilight Zone experience of science being challenged. And I'm speaking specifically about the most recent report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change being challenged by some folks, some special interest folks, and also I was on the Sean Hannity show last week, and they were challenging my belief that 2,500 scientists probably know what they're talking about. But what they do is bring up the name of one scientist who's a contrarian, Dr. Timothy Ball. I don't know if you know him or you can comment. I say, well, you guys are fixated on that. What about the other, you know, hundreds and thousands who believe, according to the report, that climate change is here and it is most likely caused by humans, 90 to 90% sure?
Well, that's absolutely right. The real issue in terms of science is there's such a thing, skepticism is healthy in science, right? We know that that's what helps us understand things that maybe we think but don't really understand. That said, you know, when you've got a lot of very smart people, and in this case, thousands of very smart people, sort of looking at one cause of climate change and looking at things like anthropogenic and the human impact on climate change, you have to take that very, very seriously. These are not people that are doing it because they have other motivations in most cases. They are really scientists that are trying to get to the truth. That doesn't mean that you dismiss everybody that says, oh, you know, there's more complexities at times. But what you really have to do is understand that when 2,500 scientists, and there are actually more than that that would say this, believe that humans are impacting the climate,
And that's why we humans need to get into action to turn things around.
Well, and there's a lot of things that we can do. And then, you know, science can contribute, and particularly on the technological side. But, you know, many ways, many of your listeners can contribute, and many of the people that aren't listening to your show right now or in the future can contribute as well.
That's why we're trying to talk louder and go farther, because that's what we focus on, sound solutions for a healthier planet and people. Little plug there for EcoTalk, but why not? Because we put folks like you on who can educate all of us. And let's face it, we can all learn more and do better, and we need to yesterday.
That's right. And we need to do more and more and more on climate change. We need to do more and more in the way that we use and consume energy. And we need to do more in the way that we view ourselves as being stewards of the earth.
And just the way we inform ourselves and educate ourselves, I think we really need to raise the eco IQ of Americans and make it not just, you know, environmentalists and some, you know, concerned scientists and a few politicians worried about this. This is something that we all need to take on.
Well, we all share this planet. And so to that degree, we all have a responsibility to understand it. And in many ways, you're seeing the tide turning, and you're seeing people really beginning to understand and get interested in the science and the underlying drivers of not only climate change but other environmental changes. And I think that over the long term, that's going to lead to a more informed society that's going to take smarter actions. But one of the things that we've learned is that science and technology and innovation can lead to tremendous changes when there's the political will behind it and the social will behind it. And so we've been hearing about, and we will continue to hear about, all the different types of ways that we might be able to use different forms of fuel or different things that might be able to be converted to fuel that have a much lower carbon impact.
And the two things I hear when I speak to school children sometimes is technology will, they'll come up with something that will help us, or if not, there's another planet. So I see here one of the things you're going to be discussing is the habitability of Mars. Are things looking more comfortable there, or should we not count on that?
Well, you know, I wouldn't count on and put all of our eggs in the basket of going to Mars and having that be our salvation. The climate there isn't that great either, so it's probably not the best solution. But I do think that, you know, while it's important to understand that technology and technological solutions are going to be available and will naturally come about, it's only by taking direct actions in the near term that you can actually motivate those changes.
I like this conference because it sounds like you're going to be opening up key parts to the public and have kind of town hall meetings. Is that new?
No, that's actually really one of the goals of the AAAS, and that's the shorthand for American Association for the Advancement of Sciences. But for the AAAS annual meeting is that it's really not only a scientific conference, but it's a way to bring in the broader public into understanding the science issues that are important for them and for society. And that's why we rotate our location for the annual meeting on a yearly basis, to help bring science to different cities throughout the country.
Do scientists who might have some doubts about the reality of climate change, as it's been described certainly in the IPCC report, do they come to these kind of gatherings? Are you likely to get any real discussion and debate about its, you know, validity and whether humans are causing it, or is that something this group has already accepted long ago?
Well, you get a range of views, but I think that for the most part, you will get scientists that have a basic understanding or basic belief that, that humans are impacting climate. Now, what that manifests itself out is in the future in terms of impacts, there might be some debate along the sides. But I think in terms of the understanding that human burning of fossil fuels is contributing to climate change, I think that most of the scientists here would actually accept that.
And with less than a minute, I know you can't comment too much on this, but teaching evolution will be one of the issues. I don't know if there's any debate about that or not still. Not in this group.
Probably not so much in this group.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us, and continue to have a great and productive conference. We've been speaking with Dr. Vaughn Tarikian. He is with the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He is their chief international officer. Some 3,000 scientists, educators, PhDs, basically a lot of smart folks gathering in San Francisco this long weekend to talk about what's happening with our planet and what we need to do to reverse course and why they should be believed. See you next time.
Did you know that if every washing machine in the country was a Bosch Next 100, we could eliminate the need for 9 power plants? That's because the Next 100 is the most efficient washing machine in America, using up to 76% less energy than other models. And it uses up to 72% less water than conventional top loaders. When it comes to efficient appliances, there's only one name to remember. Bosch, invented for life.
Money. It's the lifeblood of the global economy. Where is your money invested? What companies do your investments support? Do they have a positive impact on our world? First Affirmative is a network of financial advisors who serve socially conscious investors. When you invest with First Affirmative, you actively choose to put your money to work for a dual purpose, for your future and the future we all share.